All right. Looks like we have a quorum. Good morning. Today is Tuesday, June 18th, 2019. The time is 9:05. I now call this briefing meeting of the City Council to order, and we'll begin with an invocation, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance, which will be led by, let's go with Councilman Blewett this morning. So our invocation today is going to be given by Reverend Anthony Nolan, who's with the Paradise Missionary Baptist Church, which is located in District 3. Reverend Nolan's a native of West Dallas and a product of the Dallas Independent School District, attended Pinkston High School, and he was called to the ministry in 1995 and began pastoring at Paradise Missionary Baptist Church in 1998, where he currently serves as the senior pastor. In 2004, he organized Turn of the Tide Ministries, or 3T Ministries, a male mentoring organization for boys ages 8 through 14. Reverend Nolan also chairs the Southwest Coalition for a Better Dallas and serves on several boards and committees in our city. He's married to Yolanda Nolan, and they have 5 children and 7 grandchildren. Without further ado, please come on up. Reverend Nolan, we appreciate you being with us today. Please stand for the invocation.
Shall we bow? Holy One, known by many names and beyond all names, Spirit of life, Spirit of love, Spirit of community, Spirit of justice, we ask your blessings on the people who have been called to lead the community in which we live, work, and play. Help them as leaders to not ask first, how do we fix this, but what do we need to learn? How might we need to change? And to whom do we need to listen? Remind them, because we all forget from time to time, especially in the noisiness of what passes for political debate today, that they are not only leaders but also servants, and that it is their responsibility and ours to serve the common good of all. Remind them that no matter where we live, everyone, black or white, Hispanic or Asian, Muslim or Jew, is our neighbor, our sibling, and that throughout the ages, prophets have called the leaders of the people to respect and protect the least of those among us, our children, the elderly, the poor, and those who are forgotten. Grant them and us the wisdom and courage to know and do what is right and good and true. May they and we speak out when it's time to speak out and listen patiently and receptively when it is time to listen. May they and we always be guided by the spirit of community, by the spirit of justice, and by the spirit of love. This we pray in the name of all that we hold sacred and holy, all that we hold good and right and true. May it be so. Amen.
Amen. Now I have the Pledge of Allegiance by Councilman Blewett.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated. We'll now hear from our open microphone speakers. Ms. City Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This morning, your first 5 speakers will be Robert Ceccarelli, Irby Foster, Phil Benenson, Holly Heidman, and Isabel Edwards. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules and decorum and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Johnson only. Also, if you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker, Robert Ceccarelli.
Good morning, everybody. Nice to see you. And old ones and new ones. Mayor Johnson, I know it says you don't care about the homeless, but with my title, I want to get right to the point. I've been doing this for several years, most outspoken advocate about the homeless. Number one problem by the survey, I'm going to give a couple suggestions what needs to be done. I'm tired of repeating myself, but since it's a new fresh, I'm going to say this again. Number one, Mr. Johnson, the homeless have given up. They don't think there's anybody care. And this is what can be done immediately to get everybody on the same page. I'm suggesting, like I told the old council, there's a go to the field trip at the West End or the homeless, everybody, and introduce yourselves, hear what they have to say. Take a look at the physical disabilities that they have. What I'm trying to say to you is that when I do these speeches in the Homeless Commission, nobody's here. And I'm just saying, get together and do it as a group. You know what I mean? And that way you get national publicity. It's unheard of what I'm trying to say. And I'm pleading with you to please do this. The new members, you'll get to know me. The old members know what I'm like. I'm telling you from my heart, this needs to be done. Please do this. I'm going to ask everybody to do this. Ms. Mendelson, you know what I'm talking about. Also, Mr. Johnson, John Wally Price, Clay Jenkins, and yourself need to get together. The three of you can move this like a mountain. I've pleaded with the county commission about this. I'm not getting any action. If you have to do this alone, I hope you don't. But these three people, including yourself, can move this. And you show that you support the homeless, and you come down to the West End, to the shelters, including Mr. Jenkins and Mr. Price. You will see the action and get excited. They will get motivated. They've given up. And this needs to be done immediately. I'm getting tired of repeating myself. This has got to be done. Mr. McGoo, Ms. Melcino, I mean, it's got to be done. Ms. Gates, same thing, you know. Also, I've asked people to speak up. Nobody wants to speak. I'm the only speaker. Dr. Woody, Mogo from MetroCare, a couple members from the Homeless Commission, I would hope you give them exemptions to speak up because there are a lot of concerns. They tell me about it. They'll tell city council members about it. But you don't tell in front of everybody the problems. If they did this, you'll see a major change. You see everyone, it's like Ray Rice when you heard about him hitting his wife. But when you saw it, see the change that was being done? I've said this. I don't know what the problem is. I really don't. Just try it. Just try it, please. It will work. And one last time, please get the tape of Mayor Rollins at the Omni during Christmas. Mayor Rollins gave up a couple years ago, and that did not help. He gave up, and when that speech was done, he did not credit anybody. He talked about David Timothy, the millionaire, and he didn't talk nothing about the homeless, about the future. Please do this, Mr. Johnson. You want to get started and get started on the right way and get some great publicity, but you have to mean
it,
sir.
Thank you very much.
Irby Foster.
Honorable City Councilors, Mayor Johnson, Mr. Broadnax, in Jeremiah 29, verse 7, the Bible says that God instructs us to seek the peace and prosperity of your city, even to pray for it. For in doing that, if your city prospers, you will prosper. But the inverse is also true. Therefore, it should not be lost in any of you that there are 8 new faces on the council, including Mayor, because the citizens of Dallas expect you to make tough decisions to keep us safe. Today, you must act to remove Chief Hall and warn DA John Cruzeau to reverse his recent policy decisions. While I validate that white culture has existed, including in the police department, I would argue that anytime any of us sees bigotry, we must act to and have courage to challenge it. Therefore, what you cannot do is allow the fear of being labeled as a bigot, a racist, or a sexist to stop you from taking action and holding officials accountable for their poor management policies. Chief Hall has fully embraced the 21st century policing model, which changes the internal culture of the police department and its policies. A first pillar of this model is changing the officer culture from warrior to guardian, based on an assumption that officer and citizen will exchange trust and legitimacy based off this new guardianship relationship. One serious flaw is that most criminals, and today even some community members, do not extend trust and legitimacy to our police, and therefore conflict ensues. Officers don't get backed, the culture sours, and they flee. In mid-April, D.A. John Cruzeau announced he'll no longer prosecute thefts under $750 and is decriminalizing many other types of crime. Within 1 month, major retailers closed in District 8. We have to deal with petty crimes, not ignore them, because they lead to larger crimes. It's no coincidence that crime is rising in Dallas. We've had 93 murders, 40 in May alone. Assaults with guns are up by 25%. Shoplifting is up 33%. Robberies are up 40%. With both Chief Hall's 21st century policing model and the DA refusing to support routine law and order, none of us should be surprised about the spike in crime. How many more murders, I ask? It seems that 13-year-old Malik Tyler will join the list of unarmed black men who have to die senselessly along with Alton Sterling and Philando Castile. The people have spoken, and now it's up to the council to act and the mayor. Thank you.
Phil Benenson.
Yes, I have some.
Mayor Johnson, members of the City Council, Mr. Broadnax. I am Syl Benenson. I live in District 13, Ms. Gates' district, and this is my eighth year on the Senior Affairs Commission, so this will be my last performance. And I forgot my comments, so I'm going to rely on my memory. I am here to represent the Senior Affairs Commission, and we are here to ask your approval of our recommended budget, which is $1.4 million, which is $20 million more than last year, just a very small amount. We receive less than 1% of the budget, and we are serving over 200,000 seniors in the city of Dallas. We have received $300,000 this past year from Community Development Block Grant funds, but we were recommended by the city manager to ask for the entire amount from the general fund. And that is because it is anticipated that the CDBG funds will be significantly reduced from the federal government, and we need the money. We don't receive much, but we serve an enormous amount of seniors, many of whom have great needs, and this is a small amount. You will see you have the sheet with our recommended budget of $1,399,280. But if you look at your talking points, which I will not go over all of them. You can read them yourself, but you will see what it is for. And the first amount is for the staff, which is the Senior Services Program. We have four full-time employees, and currently we have three, and the fourth one is posted, and hopefully we get them soon. And you will see all the many services that they provide. Under the senior dental care, and if you recall, Medicare does not pay for dental, and we are asking at least the A&M runs the dental school here, and I met with the top people, and they said they're going to ask only for $70,000. Because they're in the process of building a third dental program in South Dallas. It's going to be on Sion Road, and next year they will request an additional amount.
Thank you so much, ma'am. We're out of time.
We're out of time. Yes, well, you can read the rest. I want you to know that seniors vote, number one. And seniors have many needs, and we are living longer, and there will be more of us that need your help. And I hope for the small amount that you will consider funding it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We hold on one second, Councilwoman Gates.
Thank you. I just want to make a comment to Phil. Thank you so much for being my representative for the last 8 years. She has never missed an opportunity to come down and talk about the budget. Often she's the only person that signed up at all of our budget public hearings to speak. So I know I have to replace you for my last term, so you're going to have to help me find somebody that can advocate as well as you for seniors. So thank you for all your services, City of Dallas, Ms. Benson, and on your last time to address us about the budget.
Holly Heidman.
Hold on. What did we... You want to be recognized to say something?
I just was going to say what Councilwoman Gates said. I just wanted to thank you so much for the service that you do and being a champion for the senior citizens. I just wanted to echo that. But I turned it off because...
Okay.
You may begin.
Hi there. My name is Holly Heidemans, and I'm in District 14. Welcome to the City Council. Happy to have you for our district, and welcome to all of you who have won your new seats, and I'd like to thank all of you for your service continuously to the City of Dallas. I know that you all put in a lot of hard work. I'm here to talk to you all today about a scooter accident and an incident with Uber Jump, and I have some serious concerns about the scooters in the City of Dallas. On April the 22nd, I was involved in an accident where a scooter was coming down the sidewalk, and I was exiting the building that I work in, and traffic was being directed by DPD. DPD waved me on. I could not see anything from the left. The scooter came downhill, slammed into my car, flew up onto the hood, scratched the hood, cracked the windshield. This individual flew across the street. And before DPD could call anyone, they had jumped back on the scooter and left. Since that time, I have tried to get Uber Jump to work with me to file a claim. They continuously refused to give me their insurance policy information. The only way I got it was through the mayor's office. Also, Councilman Magoo, I'd like to thank your staff for your assistance in helping me procure the information. Finally, I got a hold of someone and sent them the damages. I have $4,000 of damages to my car. Uber Jump then offered me $3,100 for poor customer experience and told me that I should then file on my insurance. I contacted my insurance company, and I have a $1,000 deductible. They told me that they believe that that's potentially insurance fraud and that I've never been offered $3,100 for poor customer service anywhere. I have filed a complaint with the Texas Department of Insurance. When I contacted Uber Jump, they then forwarded me to Old Republic Insurance forwarded me to a third-party claims vendor called Broadspire. When I called Broadspire, they told me that the Uber Jump policy has a block in any and all scooter claims. They would not even accept my claim. So here I am today. I have serious concerns and believe that a policy remedy needs to be made. I reached out to Mr. Rogers' office and regarding the dockless vehicle ordinance, and it was communicated to me that the dockless vehicle ordinance neither allows nor prevents Uber Jump from blocking claims. Now, I have a personal insurance policy, and I'm not allowed to block claims, so I'm at a standstill for repairing my vehicle and moving forward. Thank you so much for your time, and I sincerely hope that all of you will consider the safety issues with the scooters and the constituents of Dallas. You know, I'm a law-abiding citizen, and I'm out. So thank you so much.
Isabel Edwards.
Good morning. I signed a lease at 1327 Empire Central, May 28th, after reading the advertisement on the internet. And it stated that air conditioning, janitorial services would be included with the rent. While I was being shown the office space, I noticed that it was pretty warm. And I mentioned it to the property manager, and he stated that while it was empty, the space was empty, they turned the air conditioning off. But when someone moves in there, they turn it on. Well, that's not true. I've been in my office space since May 28th, and there is no air conditioning. There is no air vent. Matter of fact, the whole entire second floor of the building has no air conditioning. I talked to the property manager. I talked to the owner, and they refused to do anything. I contacted the city of Dallas. They sent out inspectors, and the inspectors gave them 5 to 7 days to correct the situation. 1 hour after the city inspectors left, the owner and the property manager came to me and said I had to leave because I'm the one that filed the complaint. They stated that I have to leave because they cannot afford to provide air conditioning to the second floor. And unfortunately, in this day and time, I hate to say this, but the entire second floor consists of black tenants. And it's a shame. And my lease states that as long as I pay my rent, I'm entitled to air conditioning, janitorial services, and maintenance departments. But right now, my main concern is air conditioning. I have severe asthma, high blood pressure, and the heat exacerbates both of those conditions. Dallas is one of the hottest cities in the nation. If it's this hot in June, can you imagine what it's going to be like in July and August? And I'm simply asking for someone to help me get this matter resolved.
Thank you. This concludes your open mic speakers for this meeting. We'll now move to your voting agenda. Agenda item 1, approval of minutes of the June 5th, 2019 City Council meeting.
Do I have a motion for approval of the minutes? Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? All opposed? The item's adopted.
Agenda item 2 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. There are no appointments for this meeting. Mr. Mayor, your briefing continues.
Okay. So we're now up to our briefing item, fiscal year 2019-2020 and fiscal year 2020-2021 budget overview. Mr. Broadnax, turn it over to you now.
Thank you, Mayor. Today's briefing is for the purpose of beginning the discussion about the fiscal year 20 and fiscal year 21 biennial budget. Mrs. Raich, our Chief Financial Officer, and her staff will highlight some of the issues and challenges that we are working through over the next months before presenting a balanced budget recommendation to you on August 13th. We welcome your feedback today and look forward to our budget preparation over the summer. I'll now turn it over to Mrs. Raich to begin the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Broadnax. Good morning, everybody. I'm Elizabeth Raich. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the city. With me today, I have Jack Ireland. Jack is the Director of the Office of Budget, and Jeanette Whedon, who is the Assistant Director in the Office of Budget. This is the first briefing of the new council year. We're glad to discuss the budget with you. We have a lot to cover. We'll move through it expeditiously and then take questions at the end of the briefing. The first thing we'll do is just review where we are right now, the biennial budget, the current year budget. Then we'll discuss some community engagement considerations. We'll discuss factors that affect our revenue and then factors that affect our expenses. Discuss our enterprise funds. Those are fee-based funds like Dallas Water Utilities or sanitation. They're preliminary fee changes. And then we will review the budget development schedule so that you'll know what to expect through the rest of the summer and into September when you adopt a budget. So first I'll recap last year quickly. The city manager recommended a balanced budget on August 14th for the FY19 and FY20 biennial. The City Council made amendments, adopted that budget. For FY19, the City Council adopts one-year budgets, even though we present a two-year biennial budget. By law, you adopt only 1 year at a time. The City Council adopted that on the 18th of September. The budget totaled $3.6 billion. The current fiscal year is October 1. It ends this coming September 30th. We are currently implementing the programs and services funded in that budget, and we report monthly through something called the Budget Accountability Report on our finances, where we stand in relation to the budget, as well as performance metrics and initiatives that are funded by the budget. To give you the overall picture of the budget, for FY19, this is what the City Council adopted. Again, a $3.6 billion budget. The budget is divided into two broad categories, the operating budget, day-to-day maintenance and operations, and our capital budget, funding those long-term capital improvements. The capital budget is where you're going to find our bond program spending, as well as the enterprise capital. That is mostly Dallas Water Utilities' investment in the infrastructure to deliver safe and clean water. On the operating budget side, we do have the enterprise funds, again, water, sanitation, and some others. We have our debt service payment, and then circled is the general fund budget. Though it's only $1.4 billion of the total $3.6, it tends to be the area that we discuss the most in briefings and in the City Council budget process. The City Manager has presented a biennial budget for the past two budget cycles, and will again this year. So the first biennial budget was FY18 and 19, then presented last year FY19 and 20. This coming August, we will present a budget for FY20 and FY21. The purpose of a biennial budget, and I think you know this, but it makes me feel better to talk about it again, is to ensure sustainability. We want to make sure that those things that we are recommending to you are sustainable in the next year. We don't want to ask you to make a decision to fund a program or an initiative if we know that we're not going to be able to afford it in the next year. So we present that balanced budget across both years. Even though you only adopt one year, we're presenting to you proposals that will be sustainable. So, again, last year we did that, and this year we will take that FY20 planned year that we presented last year. That's the basis for beginning our budget development now. We're going to update, and we'll talk about that a little bit in this briefing, the revenues and expenses for FY20, and then we'll tack on the next planned year, FY21, and we'll show you how what we're recommending for FY20 is sustainable in that second year. We will recommend the balanced biennial budget to the City Council this year on August 13th. And we are starting a little bit at a deficit because although we presented a balanced budget last year through the City Council amendment process, the City Council made the decision to fund additional public safety spending to raise the starting salary to $60,000 and provide a 3% raise for all others. That took the budget out of balance in the planned year. So our budget for FY20 that we're starting our process with this year is there's a gap of $5.3 million, and I'll show that to you on the next page. This is our five-year forecast. So as you can see, the current year is balanced, and this forecast, by the way, is what was included in the adopted budget. We will update this for the budget that we present in August. You can see then in the second year there's a $5.3 million gap. That's public safety compensation due to that amendment. When we present the budget in August, we will eliminate that $5.3 million gap as well as the gap you see in FY21 of $33.7 million. We'll talk about that through the process today, updating our revenues, updating our expenses, making some decisions about how to bring those 2 years into balance. We will redo the five-year forecast extended a year so that you can see, based on preliminary assumptions and projections, what things look like over a five-year period. At this point, I'll turn it to Jack Ireland, our director of the Office of Budget, to talk about community engagement.
As we develop our budget each year, it's important for us to understand the City Council and residents' priorities. So we'd like to go ahead and talk about some of the input that we have received at this point. So on slide 8, just as a reminder for some of you and new information for others, in February we held our annual City Council planning session, and we received input from council members at the time. On the next slide, you'll see the top 10 initiatives that were identified by the City Council back in February as being areas of priority for them. These will be things that we have been working on this year, as well as we will be looking for ways that we can address them in the upcoming budget year. So some of those items, for example, the first one is housing. And as you know, this past year, the City Council adopted the comprehensive housing policy. The second item on the list, and I'll just touch on a few of these, is park and recreation youth activities. And the City Council made a mid-year adjustment this year for a new teen recreation program focusing services on teenagers aged 13 to 17. So there's different things that the City Council has done to address these, and there's things that we will be including in the upcoming budget to address others. Moving on to the next slide, just want to talk about some of our other community engagement initiatives. We do several things throughout the year to get citizen input. We do a biannual community survey. We have public hearings at the City Council. We have community engagement meetings. We do online surveys. And then City Council members host town hall meetings each year. And I'll talk about those in a little more depth on the following slides. On slide 11, just for your information, ETC Institute is a vendor that we have worked with for the last several years to do a community survey. This survey is a random sampling, and it produces results that are considered statistically significant. They survey at least 100 individuals within each council district, 1,400 citywide. Again, the results are considered statistically significant, and so we've done this, again, for the last several years. On the next slide, slide 12, you'll see from their briefing to City Council last May, so just over a year ago, they completed that survey, and they briefed our City Council at the time. And starting with the second bullet, these are things directly out of their briefing to Council last May. Noting from the survey, the residents have a positive perception of the city, with 72% rating the overall quality of life as excellent or good, and only 4% of those surveyed rating the city's overall quality as poor. The consultants pointed out that overall satisfaction within the city is 9% above the national average. They work with 24 of the 34 cities that have a population greater than 500,000. So they have a broad look at many cities across the country, and so being able to compare us to others is an important aspect of this survey. They noted that Dallas is setting the standard related to customer service, and through the survey, they identified the top priorities for our residents as being infrastructure maintenance, police service, and code enforcement. The next slide, while it's a little complicated, once you get an understanding of it, it's a really good slide. It shows two things that citizens or residents responded to. On items that were included in the survey, they noted what was important to them and their level of satisfaction. As you move from left to right across the chart, you go from least important to most important. And as you go from bottom to top, you go from low satisfaction at the bottom to higher satisfaction at the top. And so to understand that, in the bottom right-hand quadrant of the table, you'll see police services, neighborhood code enforcement, and maintenance of infrastructure. Those are items that, according to the respondents, are most important, but that they are least satisfied with. So least satisfied, but highly important. So those would be areas that we perhaps should be looking at addressing in through budget processes. Slide 14, pointing out some other community engagement. Historically, the city has done three public hearings held before the City Council each year. We do one in March, one in May, and one in August. These have historically been very poorly attended. Last year, we had two speakers at our three meetings, and at our two meetings thus far this year, we've had zero speakers. So Mr. Broadnax asked us upon his arrival that we do more to reach out to the community and engage with residents. So we started holding additional meetings out in the community each spring. We've done this for the last three the month of March. And we've also been doing a online survey. So this past spring, we engaged just over 1,000 residents through our outreach meetings. We had 14 meetings at the end of March. We received over 900 surveys. Now, these are different than the ETC, the consultant surveys. This is not a random sampling. This is just available to individuals who may choose to participate in the survey, those who choose to come out and engage with us, those who choose to do the online survey. It's much different than the statistically significant survey that the consultants do. But it's good information. It's important to understand. Rather than waiting on those two residents to come down to City Hall, we tried to reach out, and we got about 1,000 people to participate. On the next slide, you'll see the types of things we heard from those individuals we engaged. We offered them the opportunity to tell us how they would spend $100. And so what they did, we aligned this to our six strategic areas. They indicated that they would spend $30.91, or about 31%, on public safety. They indicated that they would spend about 23% of the $100 on mobility solutions, about 15% on quality of life, 11% on human and social needs, 11% on economic and neighborhood vitality, and 9% on government performance. So that's what the 1,000 residents that we engaged, how they would divide up the budget, $100. In the table on the right, you'll see different percentages. Those are the actual percentages of how our budget is actually allocated this year. So while the 1,000 residents that we talked to indicated they would allocate 31% to public safety, we in fact allocate about 60% of our general fund budget towards public safety. And you can see the differences between our current allocations and what those residents indicated. On the next slide, we also ask those individuals what services were most important to them and ask them to identify their top three. Police services, repair and maintenance of streets, and fire services rose to the top. That made me feel good because that was fairly consistent with the ETC survey. Police service and streets made it to the top on both surveys, where fire replaced code on this particular survey that we were doing. We also asked the residents to think about all the city services and how would they respond to a question about property taxes. I prefer to lower my taxes if it means cutting city services. I prefer to keep taxes the same and keep services the same. I would prefer to raise taxes if it would allow for more services. And you can see that about 56% indicate keeping taxes about the same and receiving the same level of services, and the other 43 or so percent split between the option of increase and decrease. The last thing that I'll mention related to community engagement are the city council member hosted budget town hall meetings that occur in August. This typically occurs after the city manager recommends his budget for the year, and council members have historically gone out into their communities to seek input from residents related to how the residents respond to the manager's budget, seek input on amendments and things like that. Our calendar for this year allots 2 weeks from August the 15th to the 29th that we would be available to support council members in that process. We have traditionally had in-person types of meetings where we go out and meet with residents, but we've also been doing virtual meetings, and those are done through a vendor who helps us, calls out to all the residents in your district. It's done it's on the internet. We get input from people through webcast. We also were able to do Spanish simulcasts with those, and we tend to reach a much broader audience that way. We've averaged over the last 4 years about 29 individuals attending the traditional meetings, where we reach about 460 individuals through the virtual meetings on average for the last 4 years. And so on our schedule, when we get there, one of the things we'll want to point out is that on July 3rd, we're hoping that council members will be able to provide us with the dates, times, and locations of where you would like your meetings to be held this year and when you would like for us to support you in those meetings. So at this point, I'll turn it back to Elizabeth to walk through one of the other areas of concern.
All right, so let's talk revenues and updated revenue estimates. Starting with 65 and older or disabled property tax exemption, I won't cover this in detail. The council last week voted to increase that exemption to $100,000 in support of our seniors. Page 20, As we look at the budget development process, there are really two things that we're focused on. We're focused on the economic condition of the city, and we're focused on state legislation this year because there have been some changes. These two areas will impact our two largest revenues, property tax and sales tax. The chart on the right side shows the division of the revenue budget, property tax at 53%, sales tax at 23%, and then franchise fees and other make up the rest of the budget. Moving to the economic forecast, 76%, as I just said, of general fund revenue is the property tax and the sales tax. So that's hugely important that we have good forecasts for those two revenue sources. We use an independent consultant to help us with those economic forecasts. This year we have used TXP Consulting. They also provided our estimates last year. They are telling us that the national outlook is for positive national growth now, but slowing next year. Regionally, continued overall growth, but slowing for both retail and real estate. That's consistent with what we had last year. I know there's a lot of discussion about, is a recession coming? When is it coming? And if I knew that, I'd be a lot wealthier than I am. So we'll all look at that together. But as it looks now, talking with our consultant, but then also the general economic news, we're not seeing those indicators in the economy that's something that we need to incorporate into the budget this next year. Let's look at some historical context for both property and sales tax. This chart is our property tax base value. So this is the value of the property in Dallas as by the appraisal district. And our July 2018 certified value was $130 billion. Over this time period, our average annual growth has been 3.3%. Last year, it was north of 9%. And you can see in the last part of the chart there just the explosion of the property tax value in the last 7 years. The next chart is sales tax revenue. Again, you see at the end of the chart growth, a more steady, maybe not as upward a curve as in the property tax, but steady growth. Over the last 8 years, we've had $100 million worth of growth in our sales tax revenues. This year, we're budgeted at $312 million. It looks like we may exceed that this year. Sales have been very good. The average annual growth over this period is 3.6%. So then let's look at what we're forecasting. And I will just caution that, of course, these are subject to change as we work through the summer and then ultimately on July 25th get a certified tax roll from the appraisal district. Then we'll relook and perhaps tweak the property tax forecast. As we work through the sales tax and issues there and refine that, it's possible this will change as well. But we're pretty, you know, confident right now that these are in the ballpark. For FY20, for the year that you're going to adopt the budget, it looks like 9.6% property tax value growth and 2.1% sales tax revenue. In both of these indicators, what you see is continued growth. You just see it softening or slowing. So we'll still have increased revenue each year from sales tax, for example. It just won't be at the 4 or 5% range, which we have seen in some recent years. It'll be more in the 2.5% range. The same is true on property tax in terms of values. I will get into the effect of state legislation, and we'll talk about whether we'll be able to take advantage of the property tax value growth or whether the state cap may constrain the council in some ways. And, you know, in some ways with that, certainly values have grown. That is a great indicator for our city, and we certainly want to provide services for the new construction, the new residents that we have, new property value, maintain or even enhance services for existing residents. And so we'll talk a lot more about the balance we're going to need to strike, or at least the considerations that you'll need to make in the budget process. So Governor Abbott signed SB 2, the Texas Property Tax Reform and Transparency Act, into law on June 12th. The House voted in favor of this with 88 yeas, including Representatives Button and Meyer from this area. The Senate had 21 yeas, including Senators Hall and Paxton from this area. This will cap the city's ability to grow property tax revenue at 3.5% instead of the current 8% without seeking voter approval. Well, there are more slides, so I'll get more into it, but to give the basics, it applies only to reappraisals. So the cap only applies to property taxed in the current year. It's also taxed in the next year. Our revenue can go up 3.5% from properties taxed in both years. So it excludes new construction. It also excludes the tax rate that's needed to cover our debt payments. Exceeding 3.5% is allowed. It does require an election, and the election has to be on the November uniform election date. So the City Council must adopt a budget with a tax rate and call an election no later than the 71st day before the uniform election date. And I'll talk about in the next slide the effective date. This will be effective for FY21. So the budget you're going to adopt, the annual budget for this next year, FY20, is not covered by this requirement. But the following year, the second year of the biennial that we will present and propose, will be covered by this. And so what that means is that in 2020, council would need to adopt the budget, the tax rate, and call an election if that's where we end up, and I'm not suggesting that that's either what we'll propose or what you'll do at this point, but we would need to do that by August 24th because the uniform election date in 2020 is November 3rd. So as you can see, given that last year we adopted the budget on September 18th, this year we're scheduled to adopt it in, you know, mid-late September, we would need to consider accelerating the budget process to allow you all the full options available to you in considering the budget. So as I said, it's not effective for FY20, but it will affect FY21. The effective date of the legislation is January 1st, 2020. There's one little provision of it that we have to do. It's related to posting some tax rates and some transparency before that. But for the most part, everything is effective January 1st, 2020. So let's look at what that means. I told you earlier the property tax forecast increase for 2021 is 7.6%. Now, on average, over the last 5 years, our new construction has been 2.5%. So that means there's about 5.1% possibly forecasted that would be growth in reappraisals, and we're capped at 3.5%. So there is, in that year, in FY21, a constriction imposed by the cap that we will need to talk through. Therefore, we wouldn't be able to take advantage of all of the property tax value growth without seeking voter approval. We may be required, therefore, to reduce the property tax rate to avoid exceeding the revenue cap. If, and just to give you rules of thumb again, if SB2 had been in effect in September when the council adopted the budget last fall, we would have needed to cut $25 million in revenues and expenses in order to live at that 3.5% cap. So on the next page, we just show some bar charts here of what this kind of looks like. So you can see the adopted rate, the tax rate that council adopted, 77.67. And then you see the effective rate. The effective rate, and again, you probably are familiar with this, but just to remind all of us as we start the budget process, the effective rate is if we had no increase in revenue, meaning we needed to reduce the tax rate to receive the same amount of dollars as last year from properties taxed in both years. So the effective rate is always much lower, 7391. Then you see the rollback rate, that 8%. Rollback rate, 7811. We did not exceed rollback, and we were not required to cut our tax rate in order to stay under rollback. And then you see SB2 voter approval rate, which would have been 7570. So the difference between what council adopted and what the voter approval rate would have been for an average home value in the city of Dallas, which is about $275,000, would have been $43. So taxpayers would have had a tax bill $43 less than at the adopted rate. However, that $25 million, and again, I'm not suggesting that this is how we would have done it. We were not in the position of having to make these choices. But rules of thumb, with that $25 million cut, that's equivalent to about 143 police officers, plus 2 fire stations, plus 4 recreation centers, plus 17 parks, plus 1 library, plus 13 code inspectors, plus 7 animal services officers. Moving on to what we call Wayfair. So this deals with sales tax. So this is other state legislation. In this case, it's a good change. The Supreme Court made a decision in South Dakota versus Wayfair in 2018 that determined that we may charge sales tax for out-of-state sellers, even if that seller does not have property or a physical presence, brick and mortar, in the state of Texas. Now, Amazon and some other large retailers were already collecting state of Texas taxes, so we know that we were already getting a lot of the online sales tax, but this does have an effect on our sales tax forecast, and we have already incorporated it. The next page just talks a little bit about the requirements. That as of October 1, the out-of-state sellers with more than $500,000 in Texas sales in the prior 12 months must comply, and they have a couple of options for how to do that. Again, we had already considered it, so we appreciate the state legislature approving this legislation, allowing the comptroller of the state to make these collections, but we had already considered it, so it's not new or found money for us. SB 1152, this is a legislative change that we certainly spent some time educating the state legislature about its effect on Dallas, because it does have quite an effect. This is the franchise fee piece of legislation. So companies that pay both telecommunications and cable TV franchise fees are exempt from paying the lesser of those two fees. So all of the cable TV providers currently serving Dallas also provide telecommunications and therefore pay both fees. Based on this legislation, we expect that Time Warner Cable and Grande Communications may be exempt from telecommunications right-of-way fees, and that AT&T and Frontier may be exempt from cable TV franchise fees. In looking at the budget effect, in FY20, because the effective date of the legislation is January 1st, it's a partial year effect. It's a $6.6 million decrease in our franchise fees expected. In FY21, it's a $9 million decrease. HB 1631 was the red light camera change. Certainly been in the news lately with governments turning off their cameras as of June 1, including the city of Dallas. It will reduce our revenue. It will also reduce our expenses, but there is a net loss, a net decrease in the budget. So for the current year, the year we're in now, it's $1 million net decrease, which we will have to determine how to cover. But again, as we go through the budget execution process, we'll do that. And then for FY20, a $2.4 million net increase. Or decrease, I'm sorry, not decrease. So at this point, let me turn it over to Jeanette Whedon, Assistant Director in the Office of Budget, to talk through some of the expense factors that we're considering over the summer.
So on slide 33, factors that may impact the general fund budget. This year, we introduced the equity tool in the budget development process. The equity tool provides an opportunity to address historical practices and policies that create inequitable conditions. All general fund departments were asked to use the equity tool to shape their asks for additional funding or as they offered reductions. The city manager's recommended budget will highlight these efforts, along with 8 departments that will receive an additional review of their existing resources through the equity lens. On slide number 35, the city's budget is aligned to 6 strategic priorities based on the unique needs of Dallas. Developed by the City Council and the City Manager, these strategic priorities guide the framework of staff. The general fund budget, or the definition of each strategic priority, is listed here on slide 35. As you can see, public safety is listed as the top priority and reflects the expenses of our first responders. Dallas residents prioritize public safety, as does the budget. The pie chart on slide 36 reflects the percent of budget dedicated to each strategic priority. Public safety has been the city's top priority, with 60% of the general fund budget aligned to this area. 57.2% of that 60% is dedicated to the Dallas Police Department and Dallas Fire Rescue. DPD's total budget in fiscal year 19 is $486.8 million, and Dallas Fire Rescue's budget is $294.5 million. The budget wheel on slide 37 shows the general fund revenue sources listed on the outside. and the public safety strategic priority and other strategic priorities listed in the center. At $820.8 million, public safety commands the highest percent of the general fund budget. It takes 100% of property tax revenue and 30% of sales tax revenue to fund public safety. Public safety will continue to be a priority as we look at the upcoming budget. This budget will focus on recruitment and retention. As you know, the current year budget includes funding under the current three-year meet and confer agreement approved by City Council in 2016. Negotiations are currently underway on a new agreement, and costs that will be included in the biennial budget are unknown at this time. The city manager's proposed budget in August will seek to balance public safety needs with other needs of the city. On slide number 38, other factors that may impact the general fund budget include personnel costs. 73% of the general fund budget is spent on employee compensation and benefits. This cost of $996 million includes both uniform and civilian employees who provide city services. Current initiatives that may impact personnel costs include the HR compensation study that will address the city's civilian compensation structure, the DPD staffing study, which may include additional costs, and as mentioned, the meet and confer negotiations that are currently underway. Other cost considerations on slide 39 include pay equity for the lower pay classifications. The city's current minimum wage adopted for city employees on October 1st of 2018 is $11.50 per hour. Moving that minimum wage to $15 an hour will benefit approximately 933 general fund employees at a cost of $3.9 million to the general fund. Also reviewed as part of the budget development process, we'll look at changes to health benefits and life insurance plans. The city may consider a tiered premium model for health benefits to benefit lower paid employees, and that may have an impact on the city's contributions. Other expense drivers on slide 40 include the results of the fleet management study. This was presented to City Council in December of 2018. The study identified a replacement need of $300 million over the next 5 years, with approximately 1,900 vehicles eligible for replacement this year at a cost of $142 million. On May 22nd, City Council approved a contract for a citywide assessment. We anticipate that the results of this assessment will include recommendations for security staffing, equipment, and control of city facilities. Other expense drivers listed on slide 41 include the drivers of poverty as well as investments in technology. Based on May Council amendments to CDBG funding, we know that the fiscal year 20 general fund budget should consider the drivers of poverty. The amendment reallocated funding to community courts, and there is an expectation that the general fund will support those drivers of poverty initiatives. Investment in technology will be an important part in the upcoming budget. As we seek opportunities to improve efficiencies, we will continue to invest in technology. And lastly, on slide number 42, we anticipate recommendations from current and upcoming plans and studies that may impact the biennial budget. Many of the plans listed here on this slide have been briefed or will be briefed to council by the end of this calendar year. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Jack Ireland to talk about enterprise fund and fee changes.
Thank you. So I'm going to take a quick step back to slide four, which was the structure. So Ms. Rach and Ms. Whedon went over pretty much factors impacting the general fund. The $1.4 billion that's circled. So the next couple of slides we talk about are going to be regarding the enterprise funds that total $1.1 billion. So we'll go back to slide 44 and have that discussion. So the enterprise funds are those funds that operate as businesses. They generate revenue to support their services. Those would be things such as aviation, convention center, our water utility, stormwater, municipal radio, sanitation, and building inspection. So those are the enterprise funds of the city, where we charge the customer for the services they receive, and the fees they pay then support pay for the activities for that service. So the three that we wanted to talk about today begin with Dallas Water Utility. The reason we wanted to mention these today is because these are ones that affect all of our customers. Dallas Water Utilities does a retail cost of service study each year, and there was a dispute with Sabine River Authority, and so we have been setting funds aside in escrow in anticipation that we may have to pay that. It was a favorable outcome, and as a result of that, we have been able to go the current year without a rate increase, and we will be able to go next year without a rate increase, but we will require a rate increase for Dallas Water Utility in fiscal year 21. Rate increases for the water utility are primarily driven by their capital investment. You can just imagine the miles and miles of pipelines and sewer lines that are throughout the city, and so maintaining that system, that infrastructure, is what drives the rate increases for the water utility. The second utility that I want to mention is the stormwater utility. This past couple of Sundays, we've seen a lot of rain, and where does that rain go? Well, the stormwater, we have a system that moves that away and moves it downstream. We're wanting to invest more as a pay-as-you-go capital projects, and as a result of that, not issue debt for some of those types of projects. As a result, we would like to increase the fees for our stormwater system in the upcoming year as well. Sanitation services. You know, we have One Day Dallas here in the city, where we have solid waste collection and recycling on one day. There will be a fee increase that's required for next year. It's driven primarily by personnel costs and fleet maintenance and fuel cost in order to deliver that service. On the next slide, you'll see what those fee increases look like. This is preliminary at this point. We will continue over the next 2 months to review all the costs that go into the three utilities and make final decisions on what those fee adjustments need to be. But you can see a five-year forecast of what we believe at this point in time. For fiscal year 20, again, a 0% increase, no increase at all for the water utility, the green bar being stormwater, 4.5% increase next year, again, for neighborhood capital projects. And then sanitation, the blue bar, a 4.8% increase next year, again, for personnel and fleet cost. Slide 46, the last of the slides regarding enterprise funds. We provided a comparison of what a typical residential bill would be. These are based upon typical water usage and wastewater usage. Typical stormwater parcel of property, and then your sanitation fee. And you can see in the current year that cost would be about $100. Next year the typical bill would actually drop to $98.96, and that's primarily because of the usage in the winter months within the water utility is going down, so the typical bill is actually going down, and then you see going forward the impact of fee increases on that typical bill. We will come back to you in August on the 13th with a final recommendation related to not only the general fund but the enterprise funds as well. So the last thing we wanted to cover in the prepared presentation was the budget development schedule. That on slide 48, I mentioned early on that we started back early in the year in February 20th. There was the planning session with the City Council. We did our budget engagement meetings and survey in March. We held a public hearing. No one showed up. We held another public hearing in May. We didn't have any residents show up for that. Budget workshop today. Again, I want to encourage you to submit your dates, times, and locations by July 3rd for any budget town hall meetings you want to have this August. We will be back after considering all the various factors that we've talked about this morning and many others. We'll be back on August the 13th to go over the recommended budget. You will get that recommended budget the Friday prior to the 13th, which is on August the 9th. We will have all of our materials prepared. We will deliver those to you on the 9th in preparation for the 13th meeting. We have our workshops or town hall meetings there in August. We have a couple of meetings set aside for budget workshops where we'll go over other materials with you. We have a public hearing on August the 28th. You see the dates when we have to adopt the budget. We adopt the budget by charter on two readings. The first one is September the 4th, and then the final reading is on September the 18th for a fiscal year starting on October 1st. These, again, as Mr. Rach pointed out, this is the schedule for this year. Next year's schedule may look different as a result of SB2, but we're not sure exactly how that's going to shake out at this point in time. So with that, we'll turn it over to you and or back to you, Mayor, and we will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. That was very, very informative, and I know all of us new members certainly benefited by your very clear presentation. Members, I'm going to ask you to bear with me while I figure out how this new voting apparatus works. And so I apologize earlier for not noticing. I didn't see some of the names populating here, but I'm going to try to. This is a lot better technology than we have in Austin. I'll tell you that in Austin. It's a lot. So you know, I'm getting used to it. So I'm going to recognize Councilmember Thomas first to ask questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for the overview. Page 5, please. All right. Let's see what specifically I was looking for. Okay. Process. Okay. I think what I wanted to make mention of was we are, as was stated, it's important, even though we're in doing biennial budgeting, we approve the budget annually. And then also the impact of the decisions that we make. For instance, the recommendation by my colleague to the right, Mayor Pro Tem Magoo, regarding the pay increase of $60,000. Let's look at, 13. Yeah. No, go back to the slide we were just on. Go back to 6. I think that's where I was going. You know, during campaigns, a lot of misinformation goes on, and so I want to make sure, especially our new colleagues are aware of the fact that the decision to increase pay for starting officers and getting other officers up to a minimum of $60,000 was done to be competitive with other cities in the Metroplex. And so I wanted to emphasize that. John Fortune, can you come to the mic?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, John. I don't need to see you. if you could kind of talk about meet and confer and where we were, where you were in that process at the time that we voted to increase the starting pay to a minimum of $60,000.
Yes, sir. The city council adopted a 3-year meet confer agreement in 2016 that provided provisions for public safety pay during that 3-year period. Last year, when the city council made a choice to increase the starting pay to $60,000, as was discussed previously, we were in the end of the second year of that 3-year agreement. And so we did go back to the associations following the city council's direction, and we amended that agreement to include and incorporate that increase. And so the current agreement expires September of this year, and the city staff is currently in the process of meeting with the associations to talk about the proposals and options for pay, as well as other provisions in the agreement going forward, which we would hope to bring to you through this process that would be adopted by the City Council, ratified by the associations, and go into effect on October 1.
Thank you very much, John. And I want to make sure, you know, I had an opportunity to talk with Mike Mata shortly after we approved the budget, and he was very receptive to the amount that we had agreed on. So I just want to get a lot of misinformation out of the way. Like I said, campaign season is over. We're here to govern now. So I want to make sure that the information that you have is factual and actual information. Page 13. Jack, I wanted me and Councilman Atkins just talked about. I want to make sure traffic signal timing. That was something that was missed when you went through those. It's critically important, especially with the storms that we just had. How many signals were out all over the city? I commend our transportation director. I know I've been critical, but I commend him this time for being there in the war room as the need was to make sure that we had as many signals that was flashing red as possible. And those who weren't had stop signs, four-way stop signs possible out of those locations. This is critically important, having been on the mobility committee. And we had this conversation just, if I'm not incorrect, maybe last week or so, the committee talked about implementing this system, signalization system, based on timing. And we need to look at every possible opportunity we have to address that. Page 14. I want to, let me ask the question. The budget meetings that were held, was our staff informed that those meetings were taking place in our districts?
Yes, we included information in what's called the TCB, which is taking care of business. You'll receive those emails from the city manager, as well as talking with staff, yes.
Excellent. I appreciate the TCBs, and I'm glad to know also that our staff was contacted. I know these are not our town hall meetings, and Mr. Broadway smiled because we've had this conversation. But I do want to say this. I think it's important, you know, that we're at least informed. We may not be able to be there, but if we can't be there, we can send an email, you know, all of us and my new colleagues, you'll amass email lists through your district office with thousands of people who may be, and hearing it come from your office has a bigger impact than maybe just having it come out from general city staff. And so I want to make sure that we continue to do that. Page 17. On community engagement, I think it's important that we make note of the fact that different community engagement strategies required for different districts. I'm going to be advocating for an increase in funding for our budgets for funding for community engagement. I'll do that between now and when we get to August. But I just want to make that point. I think it's very important that we are aware that different strategies require from different districts. My time is up. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much, Councilman. Councilwoman Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you for the presentation, Mr. Ireland and Ms. Raich. I would start on page 6 with the gap. I know you're going to hear a lot of us advocating today that we want to see other initiatives included in the budget, but I think we do have to make sure we remain fiscally responsible and also understanding of this potential gap. I know Mr. Kleinman's not here, so I guess I have to have a shout-out, but he still expects an effective tax rate budget, and I think it will be included since we put that in the FMPC. So we'll get to see what an effective tax budget would look like. So I know we're going to, because you're going to present a biannual budget, and this budget will be balanced, this current budget that we'll be voting on, related to not having to be compliant with SB2, correct?
SB2 does not take effect this year. That's right. So
are you going to try to make a budget that's compliant with it, or with a 3.5% growth, or are you going to just
do? Well, our budget process is starting with the planned year that we presented last year, which was calculated considering 8%. Certainly we're going to take a fresh look at things as we update revenues and expense drivers and determine how we can make things work.
So your planned budget is 8%. It was based
That's
on
right.
8% growth. Okay. Well, I would suggest that we do try to look at, it's going to be really hard to have an 8% growth and then have to the following year go down to 3.5%.
So let me just elaborate. Yes, the rollback rate that we used in planning was 8%. The actual property tax value increase that we forecast and used in the budget was 6.25%. And some of that, of course, is new construction. So if you take our average of, 2.5% new construction, then you've got around 4%, a little under 4%, that was reappraisal. So we're not too far from the 3.5% cap with the planned budget, but it would require some cuts if we were to use 3.5% a year before we're required to do so.
Okay. Since we are doing the biannual budget process and we're going to know what that is, when, according to the SB2, you have to vote if you go over 3.5%. Could you vote in this November, or do you have to wait and vote afterwards?
My understanding is that we are required to adopt the budget and adopt the tax rate before calling the election. Because the budgets are adopted annually, no, I don't believe we can do that in advance.
So you can't proactively know with anticipating
right.
that you have – because if you look at our bond program, we know we're bringing on board at least a new library. We're bringing on – where some of the bond is actually replacement – or improvement of facilities, but we know we're bringing on some new facilities, a lot of new parks, a lot of new trails, and so we know we're going to have increased operational costs related to all those new buildings and new. So essentially, it's a new service we're providing. So we can't. You're sure we can't proactively anticipate that new expense and try to go to the voters and before.
Well, I'm not an attorney, so I would love to ask our city attorney about that. I don't know if they've had an opportunity to review that particular issue.
Okay. Well, I think that needs to be reviewed because when we're going forward in a building, if we don't think we can operate, it's concerning.
I think at the very least, when we present a bond program to the voters for approval in the future, we need to be very clear about what the O&M requirements will be for any new facilities. And very likely, we need our bond programs of the future to really focus on maintaining that infrastructure we already have. We have a lot of infrastructure that needs a lot. We have a backlog of infrastructure needs in the city. So I would certainly encourage that we take a look at maintaining what we have, but if we're going to bring new projects online, that we're very clear with voters that in the future we may need to come to them for additional O&M.
Okay. On page 31, you mentioned that the bill related to franchise tax, so that's going to be a decrease in our revenue. So when they pass this bill, and I think it's 1152 SB. So did it assure that then that savings was going to go to the customers?
Very good question. No, there is no requirement that these companies pass on these savings to customers.
So they've been paying us, and we've been utilizing it, but now they're just – the customers and the taxpayers are often the same people.
That's right.
But it's not like they're getting a tax cut related to that.
Unless the company chooses to pass that through.
Or those customers, okay. So the other important factor and when we build our budget is related to – oh, the question on staffing on page 38, the DPD staffing study and the HR comprehensive study – when do you anticipate that those two studies will be available for us as the council?
The DPD staffing study is in sort of some final stages, and so I'm not sure of the exact date, but I would say that we will be using the results of that study in preparation of the budget. I have Chief Hall who can address that question.
Yes, the final staffing study should have that report by the end of July, so we will be able to present that the 1st of August as we continue to work toward finalizing the budget.
So are you using that study then to help with meet and confer negotiations? I mean, is that your plan, finalizing that?
So at this time, it's not a part of meet and confer. It's simply just a part of making sure that we are understanding what we need as a department to be efficient in our operation. And so that is not a part of meet and confer. Yeah,
staffing
is not a part. No.
But is it going to – it won't affect how you budget?
Well, it will affect how we budget, but it won't affect meet and confer because it's not included.
Well, how are you going
to... So I think what the chief is trying to say is that staffing requirements are not a part of meet and confer.
Right.
So having the numbers of staffing is not a factor for meet and confer. However, the budgetary impact associated with meet and confer and the budgetary impact of adding additional officers, if that's what's required,
right,
are things that will be brought forward with the proposed budget, and that will all be that will have to be considered together.
So you're kind of independently deciding what compensation is going to look like for the officers, but then depending on what the staffing tells you, you're going to have an increase in budget.
That's correct.
Yeah.
They are two independent type decisions,
okay,
and factors. We want to make sure we address not only hiring and retention by addressing the pay structure, but also to address the correct number of officers that we have.
But it's important information for us because we're going to need to know what that budget is going to look like, because we're going to want to try to staff to the recommendations.
Correct.
Okay. And then how about the HR comprehensive study? Because that's going to... If we feel like we're not fairly compensating our civilian employees, we need to look at that for the budget.
I don't believe that study will be ready before we present the recommended budget. That is something that we've recently awarded a contract,
okay,
for the study, and so we'll be getting underway, and it will inform potentially future years. In the meantime, and I'm sure we'll talk about this as well, the minimum wage, the city minimum wage, is something we would address in this budget, and that is because in the past, we have both tied it to and then tried to exceed the MIT Living Wage Index. So our minimum wage for the current fiscal year is $11.50 an hour. The MIT Living Wage Index has gone up. It is now more than that, $11.71, I believe. And so we will, at the very least, increase our city minimum wage to $11.71 to meet that MIT Living Wage Index that we ask our contractors to abide by. But certainly we'll try to exceed that for city staff.
Okay, and then in my last few seconds on this round, what I would like to see is, because we don't, the SB2 does not penalize us or for any kind of new growth. So I would like to see some understanding of where we are seeing new growth occurring in Dallas. And I think it's important for all of the colleagues to realize that if the new growth is all in a TIF, then we don't get to absorb that new growth because it goes back to developers. So we need to, you know, really understand, are we growing outside of TIFs? And so I don't know if there's – you and I can discuss how we can have that presented, but I think it's important information to have.
You're absolutely right. Thank you for bringing
up. And then
up
we
to
need to focus on that going,
yes,
forward, that we have to have growth and not just absorb it in values going up. That's
right.
That's going to help our taxpayers.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilman Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Rachel. For the presentation, page 42, please. Undispensed drivers, I look at the mobility strategy plan, the economic development plan, the Dallas 2030. Is there a dollar amount on those expenses?
No, I don't have dollar amounts at this point. These are strategies. Of course, we know, for instance, in mobility that we have quite a few unfunded needs.
Right.
For example, you mentioned traffic signals, probably $500 million in backlog of needs in terms of traffic signals. So there's plenty to get at. We could probably put as much money toward it as we could, but we don't have specific amounts at this time.
So would this be part of the budget, trying to balance the budget on a two-year plan? Would this be something coming back to council at a later date?
Yes, I believe the economic development strategic plan will be presented before the end of the year.
Okay.
Calendar year.
Okay. When I look at the word expense, to me, that will affect the budget. Is that correct?
Yes.
So when I look at expense, it will affect the budget, but there is no money there. It's kind of puzzling, you know, ideal. So would that be in July, August, before the city manager make his recommendation?
So as the city manager makes a recommendation, yes, he may put recommendations in or money in for these items. It's not to suggest that we won't put money in just because the plan isn't released until later in the year. Mr. Broadnax?
Thank you, Ms. Raich. And Councilman, you're exactly right, and Ms. Raich touched on it. I think as we expect, when plans are completed, similar to the mid-year completion of the cultural arts plan, one of the questions that comes up is we've got several recommendations in those plans that may require funding. And so we will look at least where the prioritization is in each one of those plans, look at our budget to figure out, one, if we can afford to do it, bring those issues to the forefront either in the budget document itself and or work through with council if it happens after the budget to figure out how we can get that started, whether through city resources and or with many of our partners. But one of the things we're trying to do, particularly with the plans that are completed, is to make sure that they don't sit on the shelf and that we're partnering when needed and or if it's totally a city responsibility, that we're finding some ways to make progress on the plans that I think the council has invested in. So each one of these plans, whether completed or not, there should be an expectation that the city may have to either be a convener and or a catalyst and or the pioneer when it comes to implementing. And so I can foresee, again, throughout all these plans, there will be some concerted effort to bring before the council the actual expenditures related that tie back to the plan. But at this point, again, for the ones that are not complete, we do not have expenses already identified. However, there are some bread and butter things that we know will come out of many of these that we hope to find ways, given this challenging budget time, to move forward with.
Thank you. When we talk about meet and confer, and we also talking about the pay increase that we gave our officers, and the one that was leaving, the one who's staying, so how many are we short?
So the pay increases, the increase of starting salary to $60,000 and the 3% across the board for others, actually have had a very positive effect on recruitment. We've had applicants, the number of applicants go up. So if you look at the year to date for last year and this year through June 3rd, last year we had 837 applicants for police officer positions. This year it's 1121. So we had 284 more applicants. We've seen through June 3rd, we've been able to hire 7 more police officers than last year, and we've had 22 fewer decide to leave the city through June 3rd. So those pay increases seem to have helped in that way. Certainly we could do more in terms of, and I know the chief is working very hard on recruitment and retention. And so that's what we'll be looking for in meet and confer is to, again, stay with market. The local market for starting salary is around $60,000. It's about $61,000. And so we'll be looking at, you know, how to stay competitive.
Okay. Page 6, please. The $5.3 million gap, that number includes the $60,000 that we pay the police officer and also retain. The one that's forecast that we're going to hire, is that number 200-some officer in that number?
Yes, so because we had budgeted for those positions, and so, yes, we considered those that pay rate.
So the forecast to get up to speed, they say we're going to hire addition 200. I guess, let me break it back. Having officers that, in reality, that we think we can hire next year beyond the $5.3 million attrition that we...
We're going to be working with Chief Hall throughout the summer to be as aggressive as we can with our forecast of how many we can hire and work as hard, of course, to reduce attrition. And so then we'll be budgeting for the number of officers that we believe that we can hire, certainly working to be aggressive about it. So we'll work with Chief Hall over the summer, and then we will fund all of those positions.
Okay. My concern is that if we do fund all the positions, then I also look at on July the 25th, that's when we find out how much property tax we're going to get. Is that a forecast, what, 6% increase, something like that? Do you know?
Property tax?
Yes.
We used 6.25% when we did the budget last year. It's looking that it will come in higher than 9% this year.
So how much revenue that would that come back to the general fund?
For the increase from what we forecast last year to this year?
We've
looked at those numbers. It's probably between $20 and $25 million. And so once we've covered the $5.3 million gap, the loss of franchise fees and red light revenue, the move of
community courts back into CDBG and the need to fund those poverty programs and some of the other priorities, yes, we will have, that's what we're doing over the summer, is taking a look at all of
those. So if we look at that, so it's, we really would not, reality, if we had $20 million, we'd probably get $7 to $10
million. Perhaps.
Correct. Perhaps. So with that $7
because we also have to look at sales tax forecasts and make sure that what we forecast last year is still holding up. And at this point, it looks like we may have forecast a little bit aggressively on sales tax last year.
Right. Page 25, I believe. Yeah. No, not that. Page 26. Now, let me go back. The city manager right now, we do the biannual budget right now. So we are in the second year of his first year, right? Is that correct? Last year we did the first year. We forecast for the second year. So we are in the second year.
That's right. The first time the manager presented a biennial budget, it was FY 18 and 19. So we are currently in that second year.
Mm-hmm. So in the last year, so therefore when we do this budget, do we forecast for the third year, which we going to roll over for the second year? Right. Would that be correct?
Is we I'm always roll right? forward one
roll
year.
Roll forward
yes.
one year. So when we do this year, so would it be the same budget, the same forecast going into the third year?
Not the same forecast. That's what we're doing now is updating all of our revenue and expense forecasts. Yeah. But we will start with the same base in terms of the programs, the initiatives, those things that the city council saw in the recommended budget and approved for the current year. We're starting there. But in terms of the exact expenses and revenues, that's what we're updating. And then we'll see where we stand and whether we're able to continue with all of those planned programs and activities.
Okay. Page 32. Reduce. And this is the red light cameras, right?
Correct.
So this year, when is the last year the red light cameras stopped? The last date?
It already stopped the beginning of June.
So how much revenue we done lost so far?
Well, for this year, we're showing $1 million decrease.
Then next year, you're saying that we're showing a $2 million decrease?
2.4, that's right, because we will lose 7.5 of revenue, but we will also be able to eliminate the expense associated with the program. So the net is 2.4.
So all the fees that people owe now,
they still owe them. If they received a ticket, they still owe those fees, and we are continuing to issue those citations for any red light violations prior to turning off the program.
Okay. Question, communication, public service, some people said it's out there that they do not have to pay the ticket. So if they have a citation, is that false or true?
It is a citation that they should pay, yes.
Up until that date. I do want to get information out there because I've been hearing out there from the public, they do not have to pay the ticket. So I'm trying to make sure they do have to pay the ticket.
If they receive a citation, it was for a violation prior to June 1 and the June end 1. Of the program, so they do need to pay it.
So if I got a ticket after June 1.
They won't get a ticket for a violation after June 1 because we stopped.
Someone had received a ticket after June 1.
They may have received the ticket, but the violation was prior to June 1. It is a true violation. It is a true ticket, and they should pay it.
Okay, last question. Have any ticket been issued after June 1st?
No issued, no new ticket.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman West.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question, I have a couple, but my main one piggybacks on Councilwoman Gates' question on the TIF analysis. And just when you do provide that, I'm just kind of curious to see how you break apart the, the appreciation, depreciation within TIFs, and I guess also for sales tax, in addition to the property tax. How that is separated from, the rest of the city. And then also, I'm not sure how to ask this, but I would assume if we get more people going into the TIF districts to shop and to live there as the population grows, there's also and that increase to city services as well. So how that cost kind of offsets the revenue that we get. So I'd like to see that, if we can do that for,
absolutely,
for currently and then project it into the future.
Yes, and if I may just address the sales tax piece of it. We receive the comptroller of the state collects sales tax and provides us a lump sum every month. We do not get that sales tax broken out by zip code or council district or TIF or non-TIF. It is a single sum for the city of Dallas. So to the extent TIFs result in additional retail or restaurant spending, and we receive sales tax for that, that is a gain for the city. In terms of the property tax piece of it, though, it really depends, and we're working closely with economic development in terms of what's called the participation rate, how much we essentially subsidize that TIF and return to them for projects within the TIF. And so we need to make sure that we retain enough of the revenue from those property taxes to provide the services that we know they're going to expect and deserve for being part of the city. So we take a look at that. I know the Economic Development Committee has been working closely on those, as has the department. And so, but we'll be more than happy to get you some information on all of the TIFs and our participation rates and what this means for the budget.
And as far as setting money aside for the increase in services, we've done that, or we're planning to do that, or both?
Well, right now, many of our TIFs have what's called a 90% participation rate. So we're only retaining maybe 10% of the revenue from the increased value and returning 90% of it to the TIF for projects. And so to the extent that that is not enough money to cover, say, for example, an additional fire station or ambulance that might be needed in the area, then the rest of the general fund must cover that. And so those are the decisions that we make as we elect to grant new TIFs or expand, et cetera.
Is there a reason that you understand why the comptroller can't separate out the sales tax within TIFs? I think that would be good data for us to have, you know?
We'll certainly inquire. We have inquired often about breakouts of sales tax and have not received any.
Okay. I think that's it. Great presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Basildua.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was on page 13. I wanted to see on the higher importance, lower satisfaction, if you can give us a breakdown of the line items that are identified with the variances of what was put into those line items and what is being amended to address them?
Yes. So you're asking for within the budget what we did to address these items.
Yes,
we can certainly get that information to you in terms of police and code and maintenance of infrastructure. And if anyone is not aware, the full results, which are divided by council district and, again, are statistically significant by council district, are available on our website, and we'd be more than happy to provide that link to you so that you can see for your district what the results of the survey were.
Awesome. On page 15, I was wanting to know if you can give us a breakdown of, because again, what colleague Thomas said about the campaign season's over, I wanted to find out about, you know, some of the misinformation I think that the public should know is 60% of our budget is in public safety, but there's a lot that goes into public safety. So if there's any way that you could give us a breakdown of the specifics on what in that 60% is actually with allocated to DPD, and out of that percentage, what is uniformed officers versus administration?
Certainly. I'll give you now the DPD and Dallas Fire Rescue. So those two departments alone are for FY18-19 are $766 million, or 57% of the budget. So what else is in the public safety strategic priority? That includes our court and detention services, including the jail contract. It includes the judiciary system. It includes our Office of Emergency Management that responds to disasters like the storms. And it includes our community prosecution office in the city attorney's office.
Okay. I just think that that's an important piece to be recognized. The breakdown is 57% between fire and police, do you have a breakdown of what police is solely?
Yes. In the 19 budget, the police department is $478 million, and the fire department is $287 million, rounded.
Okay. All right, page 17. I honestly can't remember what my question was on that one, but I wanted to ask about virtual meetings, but I'll catch you on that one. On page 24, please. I was just curious, was this in the anticipation of a recession hitting? I see that there's still a steady increase, but why is the drop? Why is there a significant drop in the increase that we're seeing?
Yes, we see that the real estate market is softening, and so that's the forecast. And honestly, we've been in such a period of growth. It's really unusual to be in this many quarters of consecutive growth that we're all sort of looking around the corner trying to figure out when something will happen, because we know that at some point, inevitably, things will turn. And so we're not seeing a true recession in terms of a drop in value. In the last recession, we did have a drop both in property tax values and in sales tax receipts. And so this time we're not seeing that. We're still continuing to see the increases, just at lower percentages.
Okay. I'm sorry, if we could go back to 15, I wanted to just point out the reason I was actually asking about the 60% of public safety and then breaking it down into what is police and fire is I want to make sure that we identify the concentration of poverty that we have and its role in public safety. With 60% of our budget going to public safety and only 21%, being identified for quality of life and human social needs, I'd like to see us kind of balance that out a little bit better so that we can address the core problem, in my opinion, in a lot of people's opinion, addressing the poverty issue instead of going straight to what we all think of as public safety when we hear that term. So I just want to throw that out there. And then last is page 31. I was just curious if you have a plan to compensate from the franchise fees that we're losing out of. Is there a plan to compensate that difference?
Our other revenue sources, of course, are property tax and sales tax. And so we are certainly looking at the franchise piece of the budget to determine exactly how we might, be able to handle that. But no, our plan is one that's overall. We take all of our revenues into the general fund pot, and then we divide up what we are able to fund from that.
And is there any plan at all to get more aggressive in accruing the what we can get from our rideshare in Dallas to be a revenue source?
Other than perhaps sales taxes, which I'm not sure of, we'll have to get back to you on that, because I'm not as familiar with the rideshare and transportation regulation piece of the of our operations.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilwoman Mendelson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to go back to the question about meet and confer and the salary survey. I think council took an extraordinary leap in getting involved in salary for the police by increasing the wages, and I'm concerned that that's not something we should generally do, that this is something you should be doing with meet and confer, and that we've already paid for a salary survey that you have at least in draft, that you wouldn't be using that data to set salary for the next 3 years.
Okay, so I want to make a clarification. It's not a salary survey that the chief was referring to. It was a staffing survey. So we do a salary survey, which is separate. That's kind of perfunctory, that happens every year. And we do use that data for establishing meet and confer. But since we have a three-year agreement, the salary structure was set and established at the beginning of that, when it was created or adopted in 2016.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So then I'd like to go back to the presentation where you're showing the citizen survey was wanting the top priorities to be infrastructure, police, and code. But then the strategic priorities that you're showing for the council were not the same alignment. And I'm wondering if that's something we're going to talk about as the budget's going through.
Absolutely. And, you know, so as we've said, it takes 100% of property taxes and about 30% of sales taxes to fund public safety. And so that is pretty much in line with other large cities. Mm-hmm. And so we have looked at that benchmarking. And so we will have a discussion about what is the appropriate level of spending everywhere, because, of course, there is a choice to be made. And I think other council members have brought it up as well, that there are other things that make a city a great place to live in, and there are other things that might address crime that are not necessarily a cop on every corner. And so I think that, you know, that's where we look for the guidance from you and from the community in terms of how we should divide the limited resources. But certainly public safety is very important. It is our most important function. And I think that, you know, devoting a large portion of the budget to it is appropriate. However, you know, it because it's just very primary. But parks, addressing poverty, all of these other things, libraries, quality of life initiatives are incredibly important.
I agree. Okay, so my next question is this. I'm wondering what the thought is on showing the community input on how to spend the dollar. I was one of the people that participated in that exercise, and when you're showing that the community says, oh, only 30% for public safety, I think that the question was not asked properly, right? You didn't know that for 30% of, for 30 cents, you would not be getting the services you were expecting, right? You wouldn't know that you weren't getting full public safety. So I'm wondering what the impetus is to show that. Because in reality, every one of us have heard over and over again that we're concerned about public safety. And I think that 60% of our budget for public safety is sort of a national norm for a city of our size. And really, it's only 57% that we're spending because we've added in judicial and emergency management and all those things. So there actually is some room in there to go up there, because I don't think those are always, you know, city attorney is not always put in there for other cities. So, you know, 1-3% doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're talking about this size budget, it is. And this is a priority for the city. So I'm not sure why all those departments are added in. And I just feel like there's some kind of narrative being made that, oh, the community only thought 30 cents on the dollar would go there. And I just think that's kind of disingenuous when, I mean, I know I participated in it, and when you don't know what the standard is, 60% of our budget sounds like a lot, but we're still not getting all the services we actually need or expect. So I just needed to say that because I look at it and I feel like it's not really a fair assessment of what's happening.
So in our live town hall meetings that we had this spring, we did a presentation in advance of the survey, which did include the information about the existing priorities and the division of the dollars. Online, that information was not immediately juxtaposed with the survey, so that's a fair point for online. We'll make sure that we add that information.
Thank you.
Okay, so Councilman Magoo.
Thank you, Mayor. Okay, so as we go through this, I guess what I'm asking for, and I know sometimes when we ask for something, we think it sounds easy, but it's actually more complicated. But as we're looking into the future years, when the cap does start hitting us, as soon as we possibly can, I'd like to see where we're projecting that to be and what services and or other things are impacted by that. I know there's been different discussions about it in Austin and various of what it could mean, but and not the worst case scenario fear mongering, we're going to lose all of our libraries, but sort of really what that cap would look like, because I would think we need to start having these discussions with our communities now as it looks at are we really looking at an election this first time out of the box? And so I guess my question is, can we do that, and what does it take to start looking at it in that regard?
Absolutely. It takes a biennial budget. So when we present the budget on August 13th, you will see the effect in a fully thought through and articulated budget for FY21, the planned year.
But we're going to see the what it is with the 3.5 cap.
You are going to see a city manager's recommended budget, and we will let you know at what percentage the reappraisal growth is forecasted for that year, so that you can then make decisions about at what level you want to be, and you'll know whether you'll be above or below that which would require an election.
And will we also see what are the proposed things that would be cut?
Yes.
In that
you
option.
Bet. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And then in the last Public Safety Committee meeting, we had a discussion about survivor benefits and a potential budgetary impact on those for specifically police and fire, but it was extrapolated into looking at all of our employees. Can we just get a quick summary of that, or at least an update for the rest of the council that's new or wasn't there for part of that? Is that in committee, we'd actually voted to have a greater briefing on that here today because it could potentially have budgetary impacts and deciding if there's going to be an item on the agenda next week. So
we have our chief of staff, Kimberly Beazor-Tolbert, who is going to address questions on the survivor benefits that will then consider over the summer as we put together our budget, and will come with a recommendation of what to do for all employee benefits and the package that we would offer to both uniform and civilian employees. We also have our director of HR, Nina Arias, here with Ms. Tolbert, and so I'll turn this over to them.
Thank you very much. Again, Kimberly Tolbert, Chief of Staff to the City Manager. We do have the slide deck that we presented at the Public Safety Committee. We can pull that up, but if there are any specific questions that you want me to answer, would you like for us to go through the options and recommendations that we presented at the committee meeting?
I think if we just started with the options recommendations at the end, but then if you've had any further discussion with either council members or you have further information based on the committee discussion, that you can let us know, is there another option or alternative or anything that
okay, absolutely. So we'll start at slide 12. And so first we presented to the committee the actual options that we explored relating to just the survivor benefit for the medical insurance. And then we also took an opportunity to look at options for increasing the current life insurance that we provide to all of our city employees. So I'll walk through the options and then go through the life insurance options, and then I'll close with just kind of a summary of the recommendations and what we presented. And then we can share any additional feedback that we got from council. So on slide 12, there were actually four options that we looked at relating to how we could find a way to provide maybe some additional support to surviving spouses, dependents, if there is an off-duty death. And when we talk about our regular city employees, we're talking about death outside of work. The first option, of course, is just to maintain what we're currently doing and provide new additional changes, which would not be an additional cost to the city. Option two was to look at, during the time from when an event, or say a death, occurs, the surviving eligible dependents and spouse, there is a grace period that is provided for them to make a decision if they would like to continue with our health insurance, and if they would, they move over to COBRA. During that time period, that 60-day grace period is what we propose that we could look at actually providing support. And when I say support, that the city would actually cover those 2 months during that grace period. At such time, the survivors could make the decision to either continue on COBRA or identify any additional plans that are out there on the market that might be more competitive and less expensive. The option three was to actually, again, using the COBRA as the continuation program for them, that the city could participate in a cost-sharing arrangement. That would be very similar to what we do now with our existing active employees. There's a cost share where they pay a percentage, the city pays a percentage. And all of that depends on the actual plan that they select and whether or not if it's a spouse or it's spouse and children. In addition to that particular option, we would be looking at doing that on a sliding scale. And so the sliding scale is on the very bottom of that slide. So depending on the number of years of service that they actually have with the city, then our participation in that cost share arrangement would be determined by those years of service. The last option that we proposed was for the city to actually just cover the full cost of the monthly premium. And again, that's through the COBRA program. COBRA actually limits the amount of time that you can stay on, and so it's up to 18 months. After that 18 months, other coverage has to be identified. So during that time period, the city, again, would just kick in and just pay the whole premium amount. So those were the four options that we looked at for actually continuing with the health insurance. On slide 13, there were three options that we presented related to the life insurance. Option one, we currently provide $50,000 in actual life insurance coverage for all of our city employees, and so option one would just be to maintain that coverage. Option two would be to actually move that coverage from the $50,000 that we currently provide for each employee to $75,000. If you'll notice there on the slide, it actually shows you what the additional amount would be. Right now, our annual premium for all of our city employees is a little over $260,000. This would take us to get that additional $25,000, so a total of $75,000 would take us to about $685,000. The last option on that page, on this slide, would be to go from the $50,000 to $100,000, and you'll see that that would take our annual premium to a little over $1,000,001. Now, these are just estimates based on us reaching out to our existing provider and asking them how much it would be to actually move to those coverage levels. We would have to go through a process, a procurement process, to put this on the street, let other companies actually propose, and see if there would be better rates out there for. So this, again, these are just estimates based on what the current provider provided to us. And so I want to jump to slide 18. Slide 18 is a summary slide that shows the actual recommendations that we presented to the Public Safety Committee. If you look at the very top of that, Recommendation A goes back to what I spoke of previously, which is just the city to take care of the full cost of the life insurance during that 18-month period. That total would be an annual cost of about $530,000. In this particular recommendation, we were not including any additional life insurance coverage. So we would be remaining at the $50,000 if this recommendation moved forward. Recommendation B would go back to that cost share, the sliding scale arrangement that I talked about, where the city would actually pay a portion of the monthly premium, and then the surviving spouse dependents would actually pay the remaining portion. And then this one would include the additional increase in the life insurance. This option is the most expensive. It's about $752,625 as an annual cost. These numbers are all based on an average of about 20 deaths a year. That's what we've seen in our five-year historical that we went back and that we shared with the committee. And that's actually including sworn and non-sworn employees, an average of 20 per year. Recommendation C, which is the last recommendation and the recommendation that we actually presented as the one that we would propose that the council moves forward, that would be the 2 months of the COBRA during the grace period to actually be paid for by the city. And that would be an amount that we would cover. During that two-month period, the families would not have to necessarily worry about the health insurance because we would be providing that. But then in addition, we would be providing the $25,000 on top of the $50,000 for life insurance that would be paid by the city as well. This option is about $483,121 a year. We believe that this would allow both the families and working with the city to have other options that they could explore during that two-month period. But we would not be mandating that they stay on COBRA. That would just be an option for them. If they find additional coverage, that would be something that they could make a decision on based on the unique needs of that family. We do believe that providing the additional $25,000 in life insurance, there's no strings attached. That would be additional money that they could use for whatever purposes. It could include medical insurance. It could be that there's a child that needs to go to college, but that money is non-discretionary, so they would be able to use that in whatever way that meets the needs of that family. So these are the recommendations that we presented. We're available to answer any other additional questions. I do want to say that with all the council member discussions that we were able to have over the last week, first of all, thank you all for making yourselves available with such short time frame. And I think what we heard were a couple of things. Can we, first of all, afford it? And our answer, which is the same answer that we gave at the Public Safety Committee, is that we have not identified resources for how we would cover any of the recommendations that have been presented, but we would explore that through the budget process. I think the other comments that we heard were, you know, should we wait and complete our compensation study that I know that the council approved in our budget for this year? And then additionally, whether or not if we would be proposing to have different benefits as it relates to police and fire. And our answer to that, again, as we made it the committee, would not be to separate out that employee group. So that's pretty much what we've heard. And again, we can answer any additional questions that you have at this time.
Okay. My question is, if we asked you to address this issue, meaning we need to get some degree of survivor benefits, and I've been advocating that we separate the first responders from the non-sworn employees due primarily to cost and impact and added benefit to the first responders and job duty and that kind of thing. What happens if we ask you, okay, can you work this out just in meet and confer? Then doesn't that deal with just first responders, or what does that look like?
On the meet and confer, I'll actually have to defer to Mr. Fortune, but it's our understanding that you're typically not negotiating health benefits. And so that would be a question that I'd have to let John answer for you.
Ms. Hilbert, that's correct. We would not want or currently do not include those type of benefits in the meet and confer agreement. Okay. Health benefits is what I'm referring to.
Okay. Well, I personally want to say thank you for presenting this again. I need to hear more of what colleagues want to say to hear and ideas on thoughts of this, so I just wanted to get that part out and make sure that we're all on the same page, because it does substantially impact the budget next year. So I want to see how that plays out. I have a few more other questions on some other items.
Okay.
First, I want to go to slide 9 of the other presentation, the budget presentation. And with many of these, as we look into the budget, and we've had some of this discussion already, but Parks and Rec, one of the things that I've put my buttons on quite a few times was not just the Parks and Rec, but also youth activities, but also park police and or park rangers. As we continue to expand our trails and recreation facilities and aquatics and everything else, we can't just rely on our already low numbers of BPD, and so finding other ways to have security at our trails and figure that part out. I haven't seen that pop up in all these, but we've had that discussion several times. I just want to make sure that continues to be a thought.
It is. We have discussion not only with the parks, but also with cultural centers and other locations in the city. And so that's why the City Council last year funded a security study that's going to do a risk analysis across the entire city and our facilities and parks, et cetera, to make recommendations on how to best use our resources.
Okay, and out of curiosity on number 32, who decided to totally stop the red light cameras when we did?
I will need to defer to our city attorney potentially, or perhaps Mr. Broadnax. Oh, I see Mike Rogers, our director of transportation, who probably knows every detail of this as well.
We have a contract that has a provision that says if the legislation changes, then so that's where we stopped it on June 1, because that's what the law said, is that if you had that kind of provision.
So the legislation grandfathered it, but that didn't impact ours?
Well, the legislation said that, you know, if your contract had a provision that said if there was a change in the law, that the program would be discontinued. Some didn't, and so the legislature, you know, was doing that.
Got it. Thank you. Slide 34. We've had lots of discussion about this. I think it's good. When we talk about the equity tool, can someone just give me a quick overview of how that's going to work, how we use the equity tool when we're talking about it on this slide?
We ask departments to use the tool to determine who would be affected by various changes, enhancements, or reductions that they were recommending, and so that we would be considering the impact of those changes when we made decisions. We've also asked, so we asked every department to take a look at that when they recommended or requested enhancements or reductions. We have 8 departments that we're working very closely with, and they're going to have some additional review related to the allocation of their existing departmental resources from an equity mindset. And so I know Mr. Ireland has some additional information on that. I'm not sure if my question answered or my answer was sufficient.
I guess I'm trying to just, if I'm in a department and you said, okay, now use just your budget for equity and calculate these factors that we have passed as equity tools, what do I do with that information? Like, how does it practically work?
As we're making decisions, as we're talking with the city manager about various requests that departments have made, we are talking about that equity tool. We are talking about the score, and we are talking about whether it makes sense to move forward with that given the tool and the score.
Okay. I'll probably get a little deeper in that another time. Thank you. Some more questions, but I think we answered a lot of the staffing studies. I mean, part of the issues with DPD is we have put more money than we could hire in the past. It hadn't been that the issue, so no matter how much more money we put into it, we're still not hiring, and so trying to figure that part out. And then just last question, 39, have we decided that we're going to go to a $15 minimum wage?
No, that is there because we had requests from council members last fall as to what that would be, so I thought I would provide the estimate just so you would have the information. Certainly, I would love to be able to do. These are really hardworking employees who are the most deserving, potentially, of a pay raise. Whether we'll be able to fit that in is something we'll come back and recommend in August.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem. Before we go to you, Councilman Resendez, I just wanted to ask you, Ms. Rach, if we could turn to slide 9 very briefly so I could ask my colleagues here if there would be any interest, potentially, since there are so many new members, including myself, who were not really part of that process of developing some of these priorities, in having a meeting on Monday of next week or as early as we can get city staff to pull that together for us to be able to talk about the process that went into this and what input we might be able to get into that process so that we can actually have our interest reflected in that. So I just want to raise that as a possibility and have city staff speak to the ability to maybe pull that together for possibly as early as Monday, if we can do that.
Thank you, Mayor, and that is definitely something we can try to pull off, particularly if we can do the appropriate notices. It's really more about the availability of the City Council. I think as I would look at it, it would be a recalibration to see what, in fact, on this list is possibly missing. We would ultimately take a similar approach and the same exercise. We did a DOT exercise, and so if, in fact, that is the will of the council, we will get some communication out to you to prepare you for that and get your insight on items that will ultimately go up on that board, and we can probably cover some other things similar to what we covered with the full council back in February. So, again, if the council would like us to do that, we would make ourselves available to do it. I would estimate at this point, since there are no committee meetings on this upcoming Monday, that would probably be an appropriate date to do it, probably the morning of, to spend a little time on that. That would allow us at least to go away this summer if there are any changes as we look about preparing the budget that we might be able to accomplish that.
So I don't want to unduly burden the meeting today, but what's the best way to go about ascertaining the will of the council for the Monday meeting? The possibility of doing something, I'm going to just...
I think just getting feedback and nods and heads, and we'll check availability and see if there's any interest or someone to say absolutely not.
Well, I see my friends down there, my fellow, called fellow freshmen, nodding their heads, so I think we may be able to figure that out soon. Okay, so Councilman Resendez.
Just first, well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate it, and thank you, staff, for putting this presentation together. I think it was very, very informative. And then just to on slide number nine, I actually had a note in chat. Councilmember West can tell you that I do have number nine written down here because I was going to make some type of suggestion like that too. I'd like to have some input and start advocating for us to prioritize the equity/equity program/equity review of all policies a little bit more. But anyway, we can talk about that whenever we can. Hopefully, we can reschedule or schedule this meeting. And I'd also like to go to page number 34 and ask a couple of follow-up questions to Mayor Pro Tem Magoo. Deputy Mayor Pro Tem, I'm sorry. And was it 34 or
40? Wants to ask the Deputy Mayor Pro Tem?
No. Oh. I just want to follow up on two questions. And was it on 41? I'm sorry. It might have been 41.
The equity slide, that is 34, yes.
Okay.
And we've got it displayed on the screen if that's helpful.
Yeah. So he was asking how that would work. And you mentioned there being a score that the departments would have.
Yes, sir. So we received training from a consultant earlier in the year, training regarding equity. We worked with them to put together a tool that we used in each department as they completed a new budget request for next year, completed that tool as a questionnaire. We had a group of individuals in the centralized budget office that scored those based upon their responses to come up with a score related to how well each enhancement addressed equity and serving those who have previously been underserved.
And what type of equity are you referring to? Are you referring to geographical equity or racial equity?
Typically, we're looking at racial equity. However, it could be any underserved group. It could be age. It could be geographics. It could be race. But most of the training that we've received thus far has been related to racial equity.
Okay, that's great. I look forward to looking more into that and talking to staff and other council members about that. So I appreciate that. Could you go to page 41 really quickly? And could you talk to me a little bit more about the drivers of poverty? What is that referring to?
The previous mayor had a task force on poverty, and in their work, they arrived at, I believe, 9 drivers of poverty and identified those. For example, a driver of poverty might be transportation and access to jobs. It might be child care or access to child care and the ability then to work. And so in looking at the drivers of poverty, we had proposed in the federal grant fund budget to provide some grant funding to local organizations so that we could potentially be a catalyst for testing new ideas on how to address the drivers of poverty. The City Council requested that we fund community courts in that budget, and so we committed in turn to fund this program in the general fund, where we might provide some ability for organizations within the community to try ideas that might help address the drivers of poverty.
Okay, perfect. Just wanted to ask a little bit about that. And on page 11, I had a couple of questions also. I was wondering if the relationship between the city and ETC Institute, is it an ongoing relationship or is that something that was coming on?
Well, so we have a contract with them that we go through a process on. But, yes, it is an ongoing relationship. We have used ETC for several years, since 2009. We have done the survey in 2009, 11, 13, 14, 16, and 18. Costs us maybe $48,000 each time we do the survey. It is statistically significant. And we use questions across time so that we can have a look at the data longitudinally. And in addition, ETC works with many of the cities over 500,000 in population, as Jack mentioned, about 24 other cities. And so we're able to have comparative data to the nation.
Okay, that's great because my next question was going to be, when are we going to get another one? The next survey. Because I see that the last one was presented on 5/2/18.
Yes, we have decided to fund these every other year. And so our intention is that next year there would be another survey in the spring.
Okay. Well, that's perfect. And you said we can get a link to the actual survey as well.
Absolutely. We'll send
it
out.
There's a survey. You said in each district there were at least 100
That's
people,
right?
And so does the survey reveal the geographic differences within the district? Because obviously each district is...
I don't believe it's granular within the district because we wouldn't have statistically significant data at that granular level. They ensure that they receive enough responses for each district to be able to present statistically significant data for the district.
Okay, yeah, because I'd be interested in having a deeper breakdown because obviously even within our districts, it varies economically, racially, and all that stuff. So I think we would be better informed if we could have something like that. And then finally on page 14, I'm looking at where it says 14 community meetings. And then it says under there, conducted one set of meetings in Spanish. I'm curious to know what that means.
We had, so this is the spring, these were the city manager's meetings to get input. We had 14 total meetings. And then we have one, so when we conducted the meetings in Spanish, we had Spanish-speaking employees out there conducting the briefing and the survey. And we also had one that was done virtually and streamed online that was in Spanish. Our director at the time, it was the director of the Office of Welcoming Communities and Immigrant Affairs who conducted that briefing in Spanish. And we took questions in Spanish as well.
Okay, yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask because obviously it seems like the online meetings tend to have more participants.
That's right.
And so I just wanted to make sure that we were thinking about all those things.
Yeah. And we also, just as a point of information, translate our budget and brief brochure when we release the city manager's budget in August. We translate that into Spanish. We have those available at town hall meetings in Spanish.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate it once again. That's all I have.
Councilwoman Arnold.
Morning. Thank you. Is it morning? Sir? Yes, it is. Just a couple of things. Could you go to page 13? Just a quick question. On the public information services, how are you defining that public information services?
So these tend to be our public affairs. So the information that we provide as a city through our public affairs office could also be the website, our online presence, perhaps social media that the city puts out, all of those public communication activities, and therefore it takes into account transparency and our ability to share information with the public.
All right, so just interested because it says it's less important, or if it was because they're just not able to see those attributes being displayed.
They're ranking these. So there are, I believe, 18 categories that folks are ranking. And so, you know, things then will fall out in the scale based on people's rankings. They're not able to put everything as a top priority. And so it's not to say that public information services are not important, just that from, you know, as a matter of being relative to other items, it is less important than the other items.
All right. So, but we don't have a question really to talk in terms of to survey in terms of your response to the efficiency or effectiveness of our public safety, do we not?
We have a couple of questions in the survey that are individual questions. So the importance and satisfaction index is one piece of the survey.
Okay.
There are some additional questions that would get at people's satisfaction with public information.
All right, so would you get those the copy of those questions to my staff?
Yeah,
I appreciate it. I need to look at that. Also on 16, I believe, and those of us who have been here, it seems that those same priorities are identified from the citizens in terms of public safety, infrastructure, and code. They keep coming up. But I noticed, I think on 16, we want those services, according to the taxpayers, but at the same time, they don't want the taxes to be increased. Is that correct? So I guess our charge would be for us to be more efficient with what we have in terms of funding. And so I did want to make sure I pointed that out so I can follow up a little bit later. Look at number 21 on this TXP consulting cost. Do you have a cost for that service, or could y'all provide that to us so I could, to me?
About $25,000. Is that per? For their forecast. So each year, the charge for the forecast, the economic forecast, is that. So less than what it would take for us to hire an economist in the budget office, yes.
All right. That was my point. Do we not have staff that we have on board that's capable of some of these jobs that we're farming out to consultants in this particular position?
So this kind of analysis is quite complex, and so it's helpful to have a consultant able to generate that. Mm-hmm. Certainly in the past, we have had some staff resources in making these forecasts. We've gone the consultant route, and in fact, this year put out a request for proposals for a consultant, and so we're about to recommend to the council a contract for services in the future.
All right, thank you. But to the city manager, as I pursue a little bit more research on this, would like to come back and even follow up with you, because I think as the taxpayers are asking us to hold up, we don't want more taxes, but do the best you can with what you have, we need to begin to prioritize our decisions on paying for services. Because I'm sure if some of these people that are on staff started their own business, they could become a consultant for someone else. And so I keep pushing and always push for homegrown, do we have it on staff so that we can begin to save some of the monies. On 32, red light, just a quick follow-up. As we move forward as a city, how then, how much is it going to cost us to recoup some of these costs? Could we guesstimate that the cost on some of the red light tickets that have not been paid and may linger for years? How do we address that? We don't know how to address. City manager, you want to have that if you want? I don't mind.
You know, I think when it comes to, I guess, matters of revenue reduction, particularly from a higher level of government who doesn't, in many cases, understand all the different types of revenue and expense levers that we have. We're very limited in that regard. I think we've got to figure out, quite honestly, in these cases, since if it's not provided for at the state, we can't add new revenue sources in many cases. And so we've got to figure out how to live without it. And we typically do that on a reduction type of a process of living without revenue. And so we saw that last year when, unfortunately, we got out of the relationship around the stop arm camera issue, and we had to suck up for our crossing guards about $5 million in our overall budget because of that. So we just got to figure out and do our best down at the legislature to ensure that we educate and share, as well as our legislative staff in the city attorney's office and our city manager's area, to really advocate on behalf of local government. But again, we don't have a plan at this point other than a expense reduction. And we do have some small pieces, but again, we lost probably a total of, you know, $10 million this year, not counting SB 2 in revenue, and then some last year as well. So we're continually having our revenue base eroded, and the big two, there's really not a lot of flexibility in those, and we saw one being capped this year at 3.5%.
Okay, so I think what I'm trying to get to is that if we have the job of recouping the payment, then we need to have a cost-efficient plan for recouping this money, because it's not going to do us any good to keep pushing for the money is to be paid 15 years from now, and you have folks who still haven't paid. Is not really cost effective to us to do that. And so we've got to come up with a plan where we're able to make a definitive point, a plan where we stop and say, look, if it isn't collected by this date, then perhaps we come up with another alternative of taking care of that process, so that we're not spending $1 million trying to get 50,000.
We are not planning to spend any money on this program going forward. The expense will go away for the program when the revenue goes away.
No, you said how the people who owe the fines, how are we going to collect that? Who has the job?
I said they still owe the fines.
They still owe it, so we'll be looking for payment?
we will be expecting payment. I don't know that we will have an ambitious program. The tax collector assessor who also handles car registrations will not be including this in their SCOFLA enforcement. And so, yes, people do owe that money. Okay. And I'd like to ask if you don't mind, Department of Transportation.
Hold on one second, oh, sure. Because my time is running. I think my job becomes now to pull that research data so that I can present a better alternative, because in the past we've heard about tickets that have gone unpaid and our responsibility is to collect. And so we're just spending time on staff. We're paying staff to pursue this and contracts and consultants. And so it's my job to push for the taxpayers' desire for us to do more with what we have. So let me move on so I won't run out of time. You have the community, and I'll be brief, and I don't know if we're going to have a second time around. Let me just go to best practices on the police. A couple of years ago, I talked about having looking at staff and city manager. I'm going to ask if you would direct them to look at best practices in some of the other states where you have a source of revenue that supports the public safety sector, the police, and our fire, so we're not having to go back every year, every 2 years, to bicker on how we're going to sustain public safety. Every service that we create in this city has to be touched by the police department or the fire department. And so we cannot exist in this city without police and fire. And so our goal is to retain, and also be responsible in terms of financing. And so I would like to have those best practices. Second question, is it possible we can use some of our enterprise funds to support public safety financing? You told us it's about $1 billion for those enterprise funds.
We'll have to come back to that because we're at the end of our time.
All right. Do I have 2 seconds?
Sure.
1 minute. I'm sorry.
Sure.
So I need an answer to that when we come back.
Two seconds.
So are we having another round?
Yes.
All right. So if we have another round, so y'all can think on that one, and then also on the community engagement, I want to comment on that. And I do need to comment on the insurance. So if we have a third round, I need to get those answers to that.
We will.
Second round, okay. All right.
Yeah, we will have.
Well, I heard one of the news programs say it's going to be very boring today, so I thought I need to kind of raise the bar here.
You never disappoint, Councilwoman. Thank you.
I let Ms. Rice take too much of my time.
Councilwoman, did you want to speak to that really briefly, Mr. City Manager?
I was going to answer a question about enterprise funds, and I won't take your time. No, we cannot use enterprise funds to fund public safety.
Okay. Councilwoman Blackman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Ms. Raish and Mr. Ireland, for meeting yesterday. But on the slide 9 that the mayor talked about, so my question is, and we can hopefully have this meeting, is how are we using these initiatives in our budgeting planning process? Because some of them may have an expense occurring in year 1 and 2, but then there's an ROI, you know, in year 3 beyond. So if you looked at, you know, mixed housing or mixed income housing, you know, the programs may be, there may be some startup money or 5 year, but there is going to be a sales tax generation and property tax. So I was just curious, and if we do meet, how are we using these opportunities to build more, and how's that expense going to look in this, you know, budget and budgets moving forward? But then are we going to be recouping any money down the road so we can offset what the expense is?
So when we do our forecast for property and sales tax, we're looking at it more globally in terms of the city. We're not looking at it related to specific initiatives or projects. We don't do that. However, when the Economic Development Department, for example, works on a deal, they are looking at that, and they are looking at what's going to happen in terms of values, what will happen in terms of sales taxes. And so sometimes they may bring, for instance, a sales tax abatement, expecting that sales taxes may go up and allowing some of that to stay as part of the economic development deal. So they're absolutely doing those sorts of forecasts in those.
Okay. And then also, too, as you're looking at budgets, and I don't know if staff is going to do this, but Are you looking at all the programs and looking at what the value is regarding to our city and maybe, you know, eliminating that program or reconfiguring it so that way we get more streamlined and efficient as well?
Absolutely. Every year we are looking at the efficiency of programs, and we are asking department directors to recommend changes, either because they want some sort of enhancement or to begin something new. We say, well, how would you offset that? Tell me about the efficiencies you're going to find first to fund that. We also, though, ask for reduction options because there may be an instance where we need to put forward or take that reduction in order to fund something else. And finally, we ask them to look at that because when we put together an effective tax rate scenario and show what it would mean to live at that effective tax rate, we're using those reduction options that they have priced out for us to put together that proposal. Now, I'll tell you, if a department comes in and they've got an efficiency, we always take it because we want to reward that kind of thinking, continuous improvement, Kaizen, and so we're looking for that. And in a way, this is a fresh look every year at our department budget.
And duplication of services and
stuff. Absolutely.
And so is personnel involved in that as well when you're looking at it? I mean, a possible reorg or whatnot?
Yes, absolutely. We look at personnel. We look at whether we need to reorg. We look at whether the positions we have are ones that we need to retain. And then we also look at what's called a vacancy rate, meaning if departments aren't able to fill positions as quickly or maybe there's just a high turnover in a particular job, then we do take into account, we do not overfund departments. Mm-hmm. They may have, let's say, 10 positions, but if we know one will always be vacant because of turnover, we'll only fund 9. And you'll see that in your budget documents with what's called the FTE calculation, the full-time equivalent calculation. That's how much we're budgeting for. Even though they may have more positions on the books, we take that into account to be as efficient as we can be with the dollars.
And the final question, I noticed, you know, water is an enterprise fund, and I'm hoping that eventually as we sit here, what is our outlook? I know that, you know, we have more people moving into the region, and we need to start planning water resources. And so I was wondering, is there a plan soon to have more updates on that, and what is that? And it's just, will that be presented in the budget coming in August, showing that in year 4, from here, we're going to be having to look at building more water resources?
Yes. We've got Terry Lowry, who is the director of Dallas Water Utilities, who can address that. But absolutely, that goes into the process.
Good morning. I'm Terry Lowry. I'm the director of Dallas Water Utilities. And thank you for your question, Councilmember Blackman. We would be happy to bring back to the council a briefing on our long-range water supply planning. We plan for a 50-year window, and the last adopted plan takes us through 2070. So we'd be love to update you on that.
Thank you. Thank you. That's it, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Well, I believe we're on the second round for Councilman Basil Dua.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. and thank you for the Monday meeting. I think that it will be very helpful with page 9. Will we have an opportunity to weigh in on some of these priorities when we revisit them?
Yes, I believe that's the intention of the meeting.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure it wasn't just a briefing. We would have an opportunity to...
No, what the city manager mentioned was something called a DOT exercise. And so this is a lot of fun. You get to get up out of your chairs. You get to put your dots where you think the priorities are. That's how we arrived at these numbers in the two columns on the left, okay, where how many people kind of, quote-unquote, voted for that item to be higher in the priority list.
Okay. And is it possible for us to also be able to do this same exercise by district so that we can kind of look at an overall comparison of what we get from us standing up doing this exercise as an at-large versus what we would prioritize for our own constituents?
So I think in the past we've done it a couple of different ways. Sometimes we've known which council member and therefore which district said a certain thing, and sometimes we've not collected that information.
If I may, one of the things that we try to do in advance of the council's planning retreat, where we actually create this list, is to ask council members to send us in their top 5.
Okay.
And then we take that list and we put all of it up, and then council members can then move around in the room and actually put the dot to where they believe the priorities are. So we do ask for that, and I'm assuming that the city manager, I think in the last couple of weeks or so for the new council members, we actually sent out something asking for priorities to come back. And so we could combine all of those and have those ready for the special session on Monday.
Sure. I just think that this model is really helpful when you see it in comparison. And it would be really, I think, eye-opening to me specifically to see my colleagues and the variance that each district has. Because I think that once it's in citywide, maybe some of our individual needs kind of get diluted, and then we can kind of figure out where middle ground would be to make that kind of more reflect where some of that, the equity piece is one in particular. To see it as a two is really upsetting to me with District 7. So I would like to see that change. if we look at, I wanted to follow up on Councilwoman Mendelson's the comment about it being disingenuous. I am concerned when the surveys are administered to the constituency. How do y'all go about the process, and how geographically the constituents are recruited to participate? Because with my district specifically, it's very diverse. So I'm wondering, is it all coming from Buckner Terrace? Are y'all making sure that I've got, you know, feedback down from Joppy all the way up to Bishop Lynch? I'd like to just know how y'all go about that process.
So when we do the statistically significant survey, it's random sampling, and so those surveys are mailed to households at random within that council district, and so that is that piece of it. When we do the community engagement surveys as part of what we do every spring just to get out in the community, we acknowledge those are not statistically significant. They may not be representative. They are a piece of information, and we think more valuable than having one or two people potentially who are able to come to a meeting to speak at a public hearing, but you have to take it for what it is.
Sure.
It is just information, and it is information that very engaged people are providing because you really have to be engaged. Although I will say I met some people this spring who said, oh, this was the first time they've been interested in city politics, and they just decided to come out for the meeting, and that was really encouraging to hear. Mm-hmm. That is not the majority of the people.
Sure. Makes sense. I would go back to what I said in the first round on it's a perception of what public safety actually consists of. And if you look at what the general population said, we're looking at 68% total, in my opinion, because I think that the average constituent will look at quality of life and human needs. I think it kind of gets lost in the shuffle. I don't have much time, but I wanted to say to Ms. Tolbert, I would like to see if we're looking at like a $222 million increase. I mean, $1,000 increase, right, for the recommendation C?
For the survivor benefits,
yes.
The additional life insurance, mm-hmm, is an additional $25,000, if that's what you're referring to.
No, the cost to the budget, the cost to the city.
For
is the increase, the total right now is $261,000 as the expense, and y'all are recommending doing a $483,000?
That's for life insurance. Right now, the city's annual premium for a $50,000 life insurance policy for all of our city employees is a little over $260,000. So if we add the additional $25,000, it would go to the $683,000 that I talked about. Or if we went from the $50,000 to $100,000, that's the one that's closer to $1,000,001. So it would just depend on which recommendation the council wanted to for us to pursue.
Okay, one of the feedbacks that I gave is that if we're going to look at such an expense, and we've identified 115 people over the past 4 years that this would actually impact, I'd like for us to look at, if we're finding sources, how we can beef up the benefits for the staff that are here and not just the surviving benefits, if that makes any sense.
For the existing active employees. Yes, sir. And we do that review annually as part of our process of recommending any changes to our health benefit plan. But, of course, we will continue to do that, and we took that note from our meeting with you. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilwoman Gates, round two.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak again. Kim, I would like some information after you briefed us regarding this. I know this is, you know, I think we had a consensus that we supported increasing the
the life insurance.
Life insurance.
Yes.
and then extending, you know, at least 2 months of COBRA. And I know there's going to be an item next week related to that. But I know that that was not addressing all of the concerns related to, I know, the Firefighter Association and the widows that have been impacted. But you had said there's a challenge with keeping survivors on the COBRA. So is that something that you felt is challenging to do, and you were going to share with us those reasons?
The actual challenge that we presented at the committee was more about keeping the surviving spouses and the dependents on our active insurance policy.
Right.
We have two classifications of employees, either active or you're retired. The council made a decision in 2010 to discontinue any subsidy for any retirees or their spouses or their children. And so what we talked about at the committee is that we would not want to have a different classification for spouses that we do not do for our existing retiree spouses. And that's what we talked about is something that we would not want to recommend. We don't believe that that provides, the rationale for doing that would not be something that we could support in a recommendation to the council because of what we do now with our existing retirees. And these are individuals who actually worked for us who are now in a retiree state, but they're covering the full cost of their insurance as well as their dependents.
Okay. All right. And to move on, I do think because this budget is going to be our last budget that has some more flexibility on absorption of growth, that it might be a time when we do look at one-time costs to be included. But I think as we move through this process, I'm going to really advocate that we really look at not increasing our operational costs because I know we're going to have to dial those back going forward. And that's just, it's harder to have a cut. It's harder to take something back once we've given that service or made that service available. I think this also will have to have a harder look on how we do fees because I know we've been a little bit, you know, fees have to be cost recovery. And sometimes, though, we don't recover full cost because we think it has a benefit to the city. But this may force us to have to say we really, that practice, you know, because we can't absorb it in a general fund offset of taxes, we might have to look at fees. So looking at areas that we're not. I know we've done a good job of trying to, you know, limit fees. And we don't do anything kind of impact fees, developmental impact fees. And I know there's an impact it has on our streets and our roads. So those are just when we build in that second budget, we might have to consider. And then to piggyback into what Councilmember West said, I think it would be really advantageous that when we look at TIFs, that when we do make TIF grants, that we look at really what the financial impact of that growth is going to be on city services. I mean, we could at least disclose that in the information and say if it's, you know, what we anticipate, what our public safety costs would be or residential costs if we're adding multifamily. And then could we back that? I mean, maybe the grant's not so great. And then it's also at the same flip side is the grantees, if they could provide what they think their sales tax, you know, would be the positive impact would be back. We really don't do an analysis of that. So we could kind of have it's just more information when we're making those kind of decisions going forward. So that's my time's up again. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilwoman Arnold, we're back to you.
Thank you. On the best practices, once again, City Manager, if I could get help from you for staff to give me the source of revenues that are used in perhaps some of the other cities to sustain recruitment, retention, and retirement efforts for the police department. Could I get that? You know, I talked about taking a percentage of our sales tax at one time, and I know people went stark raving mad, but I know some states use part of their sales tax to sustain the public safety, so I would like to get that from you. Number two, on the community engagement, just so that I can wrap this up. As we move forward, when we talk about the public engagements for the budget meetings, want to just talk about activities or strategies or tools that we can use to pull our resources as it relates to data. Because what I'm understanding is as each department has a different activity, they're pulling in different residents and different citizens who are putting in their telephone numbers or just data, personal data. and we continue to struggle. And I know in my office, coming in is new, I'm looking for a database. And then your constituents are saying, well, we don't know what's happening. So we need to look at how we can build a database that supports the council member in each district so that we can reach out to them. And there's another strategy I want to talk to you about using our own resources, which is probably our water department, so that we can use that information to give to our constituents, because we're using quite a bit of tax dollars, putting staff out, and you have more staff than you do constituents. And so we've got to turn that car around so that we're able to reach and educate our community. Also on the presentation, this is a suggestion that was given to me by a constituent, is that as we go out, city manager, and present, let us try to use layman terms so that the public understands and not use so many acronyms and they're just totally lost. Also, appreciate the example that Mrs. Rice gave us just to break it down so that we could actually internalize as a taxpayer what's going to happen as the water bill goes up or the stormwater goes up or the taxes go up. They need to understand. Otherwise, they continue to turn them off. And so I did want to make sure I mentioned that. And last but not least, for District 4, I know we must have the bilingual presentation, someone there who is able to facilitate in terms of my constituency. And so those are the main things I want to make sure I put across to you today as we talk about the budget and the budget process. But more than anything else, thanking all of you for your hard work and taking the questions. And City Manager, you know it's a lot on your shoulders, but I'm there to support you from District 4. But my people want information, so they can be engaged. And I know you're going to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Real briefly around best practice, so to speak, you did mention ways that typical cities or larger jurisdictions typically fund public safety. Obviously, general fund is the predominant revenue source for police and fire across the country. You did make note of whether it's a portion of the local option of the sales tax that's available. I think we get 2%. That's the local option. Currently, 1% flows back to the city. We get a little over $300 million annually to do that. We've dedicated our other 1% to DART to fund transportation-related issues. And so we are pretty much tapped out on our local flexibility other than pulling back any of those revenues from DART, which I think has come up before. I think there was a cycling down given pre-existing debt and other types of commitments that would not allow for that money to flow back to us for, I think, several years in the future. Ms. Rach may have more specifics on that, but again, those are typically where, unless you're in San Antonio and you own a utility and you get about $200 million from that, but we're not. And so, again, I think we're limited to our bigger revenue sources, sales tax and property tax.
Thank you so much. But what I want to make sure we do as a council, and I think we have a chance to do this, Mayor, we need to be the council that goes on record as having fought for public safety in this city. And so we're not continuing to play this game with under which cup we're going to find this money, because we cannot do without public safety. We know that. And so we need to do what we know we can do. We must find it and take care of business, because we cannot go to these town hall meetings continuing to feed information that, oh, we're down 700 police officers. Oh, we down. Oh, woe is me. I had a constituent to tell me she doesn't want to hear that. She wants an answer to the question, what are we going to do? How are we going to address public safety in this city? And so I did want to make sure I shared that with Mrs. Brown. She told me, Ms. Arnold, stop. I don't want to hear it. She wants us to solve the problem.
Your all points right. Are very well taken. Thank you very much, Councilwoman. Councilman Atkins, for your second round.
Thank you. Ms. Rachel, let's talk about TIF. When we form TIFs, it is a benefit to DISD, right? Because they do not take, they do get a share of taxes, right?
That's right. For the City of Dallas tax bill, the school system is a little under 50%.
Right. And I'm going to say, colleagues, you know, when we talk about TIF, this has been in our toolbox for many, many years. And I'm trying to make sure that when we do those TIF, it do benefit DISD, education. And also that when we also do those TIF, there's a way that we can to develop the southern part of town, the southern part of Dallas. And most of the TIF started in North Dallas before it started moving to the southern part of Dallas. And the benefit is also when you have a part of the city that's got 15% of the tax base, the 85% north, we need that tool in the toolbox in order to grow our property tax. And we can hand pay more police hire and more cold environment and more customer service. So I try to make sure that when you do that analysis to my other colleagues, be sure that we do what is positive, how to help to grow the tax base. I just want to throw that out there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And to be fair, if I may add, to DISD and RISD and the county does participate in all of our TIFs, it appears, in a couple of TIFs. Now, granted, not more than a couple. We do have some participation from other places, DISD in one, Dallas County Hospital District, and Richardson Independent School District. So at times they do participate, but certainly it's not the rule.
It's not a rule, but also just look at for many, many years, we look at American Airlines Center. It would not have been there if we did not kept the TIF in place. The more offices growing around American Airlines Center. It would also help West Dallas without the TIF to expand the TIF in American Airlines Center. West Dallas would not have the amenities they would have. When we do that, we got to make sure that we do not fall gentrification over there, but that is a tool that the city of Dallas need in the southern part of Dallas and grow our property tax base. So when you look into it, but also look at the benefit, how you do improve our tax base and quality of life in another part of the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilwoman Gates, for your third round.
I'll be quick. I wanted to comment on page 9, and I'm supportive of trying to have another session on Monday that we can make sure we hear from all the new council members and mayor on priorities. But on number page 9, I think the way I read it, and I'm not sure if ever you might have an explanation of how we created this, this is the number, like by 19 on the first one, that's 8 council members, correct? Prioritize that, and then 6 prioritize that,
correct?
So a total of 14 is the way. It's not
over the 2 years of the biennial. So the 6 in FY20 right. could be 6 of the 8 in FY19. They could have put their dot in both years.
Okay, it's not saying they prioritized that as first. They just made it a priority.
That's right.
It's the dot. It was a dot. Yeah. So I think it's a little misleading. I mean, for all of you that didn't participate in this, it wasn't that we were saying, number one, we got 3 dots. So that's what that information is saying. So of all of our 3 dots, we took, 8 of us took one of our dots and put it in 19. Right. And we could have put it, as Ms. Rach said, we could have put our 20 dots and our 19 dots in the same place. Or we could have put all 6 dots in different years. So I mean, it's a tool, but it's not saying, take it for what it is, I guess. But understand what that actual, what that exercise represents. I think it needs to be clear to all the new council members as well and the mayor.
No, thank you for that clarification. Councilwoman Mendelson, for your second round.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to say thank you for encouraging us to have a voice in these priorities and also to acknowledge the city manager who sent a very extensive email to us with asking for our input. I know I actually took this slide and I sent it back to him in rank order. And that may be actually what we're talking about, is not just having dots, but then also doing the exercise of taking the dots and making them rank order so that it does sort of prioritize it. I am very interested to hear your answer to the city manager's mention of DART funding and what if we pulled back some of that sales tax. And this may or may not be the right time. It might be too big of a topic for today. So whether it's today or in the future, I'm very interested in hearing that publicly, because I know a number of my constituents are interested as well.
Thank you. I would like to have an opportunity to go back and review those numbers. The proposal was quite a while ago during the pension negotiations. However, at the time, if I recall correctly, it was something like we would need to continue to pay the one penny to DART for about 13 more years just to defease the debt associated with the city of Dallas. DART issues what are called revenue-backed bonds,
And I'm sorry, not revenue-backed bonds, but, well, it is with sales tax. And so our sales tax is committed through bond covenants to pay off that debt. And it was going to take, you know, at the time, 13 years. And I'll go back and refresh myself on what the exact proposal was and what the numbers were and provide that.
And when you do that, will you also look about once all the bonds are issued for the Cotton Belt, if that doesn't add another 50 years of our debt repayment? Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilman Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I really want to make sure that we're prioritizing public safety. This is something that I think everybody's getting a little bogged down on other things, which is fine. That's what we do during this process is we start getting into the weeds. But public safety is definitely a major concern, not just in District 6, but from residents that I'm hearing from all across the entire city. So I just want to make sure that we're really focusing on that and that, Chief Hall, if whatever you need from us, please let us know so that we can start to work with you and hear from you. So I appreciate our new monthly meetings so that I can keep up. So I want to tell you thank you for that so that we can get you what you need so that we can get this situation under control as quickly as we possibly can. So that's one thing. The other thing is on this DOT exercise. Even when we did it during our retreat, Mr. Mayor, you weren't here, but I think I mentioned it to somebody in city management staff that I thought it was a very flawed exercise because I could take all six of my dots and I could be fiscal year 20 and have stuck all my dots there. You know, if I really wanted that to be a priority and I could have bumped my issue up as high as I possibly could. I didn't do that, but it was very possible. Or I, you know, talking to colleagues, you know, that were sitting there going, well, this is important to me, but I don't know where to stick my dot because, you know, if I could have half a dot here and half a dot there to bump something up a little bit. So this might be something we want to relook at, but I do believe that this was important for you all just as staff to see kind of where we were kind of thinking. But at the end of the day, I still think it was a flawed exercise for us to look at. And also, you know, I do want to do this exercise somehow again differently because we do have seven new members here whose voices should be heard, including our mayor's, because I'm sure he has some ideas that he would like to add in there that may not be there or that he may want to talk to us more about, as well as my fellow new colleagues that are on the council. The last thing is on this is going to be tough. And I know, Ms. Rach, you're going to have the hardest job because all 15 of us are going to be coming to you for different priorities, different things that we
That's
want.
That's why we devise complicated dot exercises.
Right.
So you can experience that.
Right, right. And it is hard, you know, and I can tell you as one who, you know, if you gave me, you know, I was trying to get dots from, you know, trade dots, and it didn't work, unfortunately. And I think somebody left early, and I was like, I think Ms. Tolbert caught me trying to get those dots. So, and then I was trying to like split them with other council members when they realized that there were six extra dots. I'll give you three if I could keep three, you know. But you know, in all seriousness, this is going to be very hard for all of us going into this, you know, next biennium. Is how do we prioritize? Because we are hearing that number that you said with that list of everything we could potentially cut, and if you can say it again, just so that the public hears what the potential that the state legislature has sent us that we may have to do if we don't get this right. I just want the public to hear this. That was very scary, hearing all of those items. And whoever is doing the clock, I'm on first round, just FYI. So.
Right. So if we had to cut $25 million out of the budget last year when the council adopted it, that is the equivalent of 143 police officers, two fire stations, four recreation centers, one library, 17 parks, and then 20 officers, so 13 of those code inspectors and seven of them animal service officers.
Thank you, Ms. Rach. And what I'm hearing from what you showed that the public, you know, in our meetings that they wanted prioritized was public safety, code. I think, Mr. Ireland, you said it, public safety, code, parks. That's what, you know, I kept hearing over and over. There might have been one other thing that one study said was different than the other. I think it was fire, which goes under public safety, and infrastructure. So, you know,
that right there is telling me what we've got to be focused on. And to hear 143 officers when, you know, I don't even know what the number is. I hear all kinds of numbers. I'm believing the chief when she tells me, but, you know, I'm hearing these crazy high numbers, but to add another 143 there is just something we can't afford to do as a city. And then those other priority areas that the citizens are telling us that they expect us to fund. So if we can figure out how to get there, that'd be my place, is I want to get back to basics and let's really focus on what we do well as a city, which is picking up trash, making sure your water's delivered, the public safety, the fire, you know, our parks and rec, libraries. If we're focused there, there's got to be stuff that we've got to, that we can move around if we have to. And it's going to be hard because some of those programs are going to be some that are probably near and dear to my heart that I'm just going to have to go, you know what, in order to do the basics, this is what we're going to have to do. And this is what's going to be tough for us going, you know, not this one so much, but the second one is going to be really, really tough. So, but I thank you for this because it's a good start for us to start looking. And I like the scare that you added in there so that we can get to work. I know you didn't do it on purpose.
It's reality.
It's the truth. You know. We got to tell the truth, right?
So right.
Thank you for telling us the truth and not trying to hide that from us. Thank you, Ms. Rach, for this. And we've got a couple months to get through this. And thank you, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate it.
Of course. Okay, so members, I see in the queue that there are two more members who would like to say something. So I want to ask you this. Would it be your pleasure that we power through, let the remaining two members who have questions, and maybe if anyone who didn't get a question in who wants to, maybe Councilmember Blewett, if you have anything you want to ask, we can get that out, and then we could actually adjourn and be done, or would you like to go ahead and go to lunch and come back? So we're going to power through. All right. So if that's your pleasure, then we'll do Councilmember West, Councilmember Arnold, and then if you have anything you'd like to add, Member Blewett, then that'll be everyone who have had a chance to weigh in today, and then we can adjourn.
Councilmember Blewett told me he had like a 15-minute speech to give, so he's going to add all his time together.
All right, so
thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mine's just a quick suggestion on the different categories, the initiatives we were just looking at on that slide. If we're going to meet on Monday and we're possibly opening up the categories, which I think is a good idea to add some more, in the interest of time and efficiency on Monday, I would suggest if we're going to be adding new categories, maybe we do so this week and then let staff kind of combine them and then lay them out for us, just a suggestion, so that we're not coming up with them on Monday and having to go through that then. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Councilwoman Arnold.
Thank you. I thought you were going to skip over me, Mayor.
No, of course not.
No, quickly, once again, on the insurance, that was the one question someone had asked me. Did we survey the staff, city staff, to get their input on this these proposals? The employees.
This proposal.
On the insurance.
Yes, ma'am. On the survivor benefit, it does not apply to active employees per se, but it would be a benefit for their survivors at the time of death. And so we constantly asked our employees to give us feedback on benefits. We've just gone through some focus discussions
right,
with employees,
that's what I want to
even on the our existing benefits that we're providing. So that is something that we do on an ongoing basis.
Okay, that was the question someone asked me, so I need to ask you that. And then the last thing, I just wanted to reemphasize the need for us to get to public safety. And city manager, also, I know that there's something called public safety bonds. I wouldn't put it in this particular budget. But do you all know anything about public safety bonds? That you all could get back with me on that. I've seen that somewhere in some of the cities where there's like a bond initiative to fund public safety.
I'm not familiar with public safety bonds. Generally, bonds are not allowed to be used for operations and maintenance. Certainly, salaries would be. If it were public safety facilities, that's something we could finance with long-term debt. But
because I just have a little time. I've just been doing a little research, so I know that there are some cities that do that.
We'll
so could you all
it.
Give that back to me? That's what I need to know as we move forward to address this issue of public safety deficit. We've got to find a solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. We have Mr. Blewett. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I feel a lot of pressure to fit in my remarks in under 15 minutes now. Thank you. I would echo that a lot of questions that I had were answered. I do have a few questions for you that I'll be sending you by email. I'd prefer it that way. And that's the end of my remarks.
Thank you very much. I think our city manager had some remarks you'd like to make.
Thank you, Mayor. And just more broadly, as I think we, one, got great feedback today, and hopefully we'll receive more thoughts and guidance at the special meeting that we hope to call. We will get out as quickly as possible the request for the types of information that we'll need to prepare for that. I'll spend some time with the mayor to really talk about the format and some of the goals that he wants to get out of the special session. And so, again, thank you for that. I would just say this. I think no one is running away from the notion that this is going to be a challenging budget. And I think next year, in the second part of the biennial, will be even more challenging. I think public safety, as I've heard throughout, not just today, but over my entire tenure here, is of great importance. But I've also heard similarly about every other thing that we do in this city is being equally as important, and it's going to require some tough choices. And so I would just be not the type of city manager that I am if I didn't ask council to come in with clear, focused glasses around the realities of we can't continue to do everything we do today. And I think council may find an opportunity to feel like they can scrub the budget down to, I guess, the final nickel under each cushion. But when you do that, it will probably add up to $2-4 million, if in fact that is even doable. But that doesn't deal with what I believe are the $20 and $25 million issues that we talk about in reference to TIFs and our economic development tools. I think Councilmember Atkins is correct that very much of the future of a portion of our city is going to be dependent on the investment that this community and this council will allow us to make in the infrastructure that is non-existent, that developers may or may not be able to support on their own. But having said that, I think we need to look at, when we develop and revise our TIF policy, on ensuring that the development at some case can pay for the absorption of the resources that it will require as they develop out. And so we will be working on, I've already directed my team to work on a model where council can see that more clearly, that we can have discussions when we approve development agreements that come along with the TIF agreements that our TIF boards approve. And I'll just say in closing, because I heard the comment come up and there was some discussion today, and I think Ms. Tober did a great job of laying out, and I think we shared in the Friday memo, the full report that you saw on the survivor benefit, that there is no there's no item scheduled for the 26th, or at this point we're not planning to do that, to address this issue at the council-matic level. We will look, as discussed earlier, throughout our budget process, and we'll look to recommend, and it may be a part of the city manager's budget that you'll receive later this summer. So I just wanted to be clear so that I didn't get phone calls on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday that was going to be what was done. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Deputy Mayor Pro Tem McGue.
Thank you. So I guess the committee voted to put an item on the agenda, and so it may be something where we need to clarify that, but it
committee voted to put the item on the agenda, but it's up to the mayor or the city council to schedule the item.
Yeah.
Well, it was the direction to the mayor. It was what that action was.
But we put a date on it. So was it presented to the mayor then?
It was presented to the mayor to put the item on the agenda, but he's got 30 days to put
this
it on the agenda.
No, we put a date at the committee.
I know you all put a date on it, but the committee
can't do that.
That's right.
So, well, you know what? When we're in committees, we need an attorney telling us that can't be done if we make a motion, right, and it's voted on. So, and not just put in the memo that following Friday that it can't be.
So what's the question right now? That's before us right now. Is this just a little sidebar discussion?
Well, I mean, anything can be put on the agenda by the city manager or the, and I'm hearing the city manager's not putting on the agenda, so it's up to the mayor. I feel like to honor the public safety committee, we should have an item on the agenda. That being said, I don't know if we have the consensus of what the committee was and what the committee would be. I don't know where that is right now at this moment.
Okay.
I mean, Tammy Palomino with the city attorney's office. The rules of procedure dictate that the committee's recommendations are advisory only unless they submit a memo to the mayor requesting that the item gets placed on.
Okay. All right. Well, sounds like that question's been asked and answered. So with that, I'd like to say something about this proposed meeting for Monday. It would be my strong preference that we try to have this meeting, and I want to just say that I meant everything I said yesterday about viewing this new council as being a team, and I feel like, you know, I don't want to get too into sports analogies. I tend to go to those a lot, but I will say, you know, we got some veterans, we've got some rookies. And so I'm one of the rookies, and we need the veterans to be there if at all possible. We need your feedback. We need your help to think through some of these things. We've not been through this, those of us who've not served before. So it would be my strong preference that we have the meeting and that as many of you as are able to adjust your schedules accordingly to be present. I would certainly appreciate it, and I think I probably speak on behalf of the people who have not served on this body before, that it would be helpful to us to have you here to help guide us through some of these conversations. You have a lot of institutional knowledge that we think would probably be beneficial, and so let's try to see if we can get as many of the veterans and as many of the rookies to come to this first week of training camp and be there next week. It's also my intent at that meeting, if we are able to pull it together, to distribute what I'm going to call a committee card, which would actually be an opportunity for you to tell me what you want in terms of the committees, and I also with that include what the committees will be. And then I would like to have a meeting with as many of you as possible individually to discuss that with you during the course of the week, and by the end of the week, you can give me the cards back. I'm thinking by Friday, and then we can get to work. So that would be my desire for next week, if that's possible for us to pull together a meeting on Monday and get this committee process, the discussions that we need to have about that going next week before council goes into its July recess. So with that, if there's not any Councilman Basildua?
I just have a procedural question on how the committee appointments go. I'm new.
I am too.
I wanted to just, you just make them and it's handed out. It's not done in a meeting?
No.
It's just handed out, and then when we can come back from recess, we already have our right spots. Thank you.
Councilman Thomas?
Thanks, Mayor. Just a quick announcement. For those, especially those incoming, those new council members, I chair the complete census committee. And so if you haven't been heard from Elizabeth or Edward Turner, we are asking each of you to appoint at least two people to that committee. The committees are already started meeting. A hard to count committee actually is having a meeting this evening at the DISD building on Buckner. So please submit the names as quickly as you can, because the committees have already started meeting, and I can give you, want to meet me one-on-one, I'll give you any more details, but I want everyone to know we need you to appoint those two people as soon as possible.
Councilwoman Gates?
With regard to Monday meeting, I know you can't hold a meeting unless you have a quorum, everybody's there, so you might, as soon as you get out of time, and then if yes. Kim sends it out, we can say yes or no, just so you can make sure that you don't have people come and not have a quorum. So, and then
understood.
I'm willing to, I've got some things scheduled on Monday, but the sooner you tell me the time, I can just rearrange those. So we
That's
can
so great. We down. Really appreciate that. Is there any further discussion or any questions?
I get it at 4:30.
Councilman Atkins? did you have anything else?
For Monday. For
okay.
Me.
Okay. So again, it really is. I do understand, Councilwoman Gates, that we have quorum requirements, and so that's why I'm asking now that everyone give as much effort as they can to being there on Monday, so we can try to have a meeting and proceed along those lines. So if there's no further discussion, the time is now 12:18, and this briefing meeting of the City Council is adjourned. Thank you very much.